It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here with lots to talk about. He's mad as heck about all those ads. They're starting to pop up in Windows. He warned you. Also, Windows Subsystem for Linux is now out of beta. You can even run GUI Linux apps on your Windows machine. And we'll talk about Paul's KD ratio. Apparently not so hot. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 804, recorded Wednesday, November 23rd, 2022. Still slippery after all these years. Windows Weekly is brought to you by SecureWorks. Are you ready for the inevitable cyber threats? SecureWorks detects evolving adversaries and defends against them with a combination of security analytics and threat intelligence directly from their own counter-threat unit. Visit SecureWorks.com/twit to get a free trial of Taegis Extended Detection and Response, a.k.a. XDR. And by Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat that lets you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe their building process and what they've learned from their experiences. Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. And by Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill. Are you wasting money on subscriptions? Who isn't? Cancel your unnecessary subscriptions right now at rocketmoney.com/windows. Seriously, it could save you hundreds per year. It's time for Windows Weekly. Yes, Dozers, it's time to get together, talk with Mr. Paul Thurrott here about all the latest Scrapple news. Hello, Mr. T.
How you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Very well.
You had Scrapple for lunch, but it's Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Right.
Aren't you, shouldn't you be saving up for tomorrow?
That's a light Pennsylvania breakfast. I had it for lunch. So
a little Scrapple and eggs. Sounds great.
It's like one meal for two meals.
Yeah. Breakfast for lunch, breakfast for dinner. What are you doing tomorrow?
We are having it here. So we've got 20-ish people coming.
Uh-oh.
Big turkey. Brining and whatnot.
I saw your turkey swimming earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
It's the right way to do it.
Nice. That's going to be good. And you're cooking it in a stove?
Yeah. Yes.
No. You're not digging a pit. And
no. God, we're not Cro-Magnons.
Put it on the stove. That's what you have a stove for, an oven.
I'd like to be in the police report this week. Let's deep fry the turkey.
Oh, man. Crazy. Do not. Okay, just your annual public service warning. Do not throw a frozen turkey into a deep fat fryer. Make sure there is plenty of room in the deep fat fryer so that the oil doesn't overflow, catch on fire, and destroy your home. Simple.
Also, if God forbid you have to cook it this way, do it on cement.
Yeah.
Or, you know, asphalt or something.
Yeah.
Not on wood or inside your house or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah in our chat room says she actually loves the Paul and Leo show. She says it's like brotherly love. So we're here.
Right.
We're here. We are. We're kind of. What is new in the world of Winders?
Actually, what I'd like to talk about first is what is old.
Everything old is new again.
Yeah, and getting worse. So 10 years ago this month, I wrote an article in which I referred to the first ads that had ever appeared in Windows as a slippery slope.
Oh, boy, that slope.
Yeah. And now I was criticized in certain circles for this. You know, this is kind of a regular problem, I would say, in any enthusiast community, that if you complain about something, you always get this group of cheerleaders who will pop up and say, if you hate it so much, why don't you go marry someone else? Or whatever. You know, like, you don't like it here, leave, you know.
Why don't you move to move to Denmark?
Yeah, right, exactly. Where, you know, everyone's a winner.
So when
you know?
They started putting ads in Windows, what?
Eight.
Eight?
Yeah, 10 years ago this month. So
what do you mean by ads? First of all, we should say...
Yeah.
What
so the first
is.
Ads, right. Yeah. So Windows 8, if you think back to Windows 8, This was the first version of Windows to include this mobile app platform that at the time was called Metro.
Oh, yeah.
And is now, they just sort of refer to it as Windows Store apps or, Microsoft Store apps or modern apps or whatever. But this was the new app platform at the time. And of course, they were going for emulating what Apple was doing with iPhone, what Google was doing with Android and so forth. And so they wanted these apps to have everything that those apps have. And one of those things is advertising. So in the initial release of Windows 8, these ads were only in the apps, you know, but I saw this for what it was, which was, you know, I always tell this story now because this is only a year old, but when my kids went to Mexico City for the first time, we were downtown and there were these cops doing absolutely nothing, but there were a ton of them and they're all blowing their whistles. And my son said, "What is going on with these whistles?" And I said, "Mark, listen, they didn't issue whistles to these people so they wouldn't use them. They're going to use the whistles." And they would basically stand on a street corner, the light would turn green, they start blowing the whistles and telling people which way they go, doing absolutely nothing. Like this is already handled quietly by the light. But that's
satisfying, you know, work though. It really is.
Yeah. So to apply that theory to Windows, they didn't put ads in Windows 8 so they could put fewer ads later.
Right.
There was always going to be more ads. And sure enough, if you plot the course of Windows 8 point whatever, 1111, Windows 10 and now Windows 11, the instances of ads have escalated. Now, in this proliferation, there's also these things that I think, just to speak plainly, I would say are ads, but some other people might think are other things. You know, like it's okay for Microsoft to promote its other apps and services, or in some cases, promote a feature of an app or service that you're already paying for, but maybe not, you don't know about.
That's just a helpful tip. That's not an ad. It's a tip.
Well, but I will collect all of these things under the umbrella of advertising, because ultimately, while some of them may be well-meaning, even the well-meaning ones are often really stupid. And what I mean by that is like, hey, did you know you could use OneDrive to blah, 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 blah? Yeah, I'm using it right now. How come you don't know that? Like those kinds of things are still intrusive and dumb, and they're interruptions, right? We can kind of go over the semantics of what's an ad and what's not an ad, but it's everything from that to outright ads. The other problem with that kind of, you know, non-ad, as some people might refer to it, is that there's never any control, whether it's in Windows or Office or anywhere else in the Microsoft ecosystem, to say, yeah, I did know that, and by the way, never show me this again. You know, the worst example of this.
This is universal, though. Amazon's Echo, every time I give it a command now, it goes, and did you know? And then gives me some stupid tip that goes on. I don't want to hear it. Go away.
Yeah,
that's even
more. No, you're right. And I another example that is very much like that is I just configured a new phone. I brought up Google Maps for the first time. I hit directions to go to a place, and it said, "Hey, would you like to blah blah blah?" No, I'd like directions. No. I just told you what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So yes, you're right. It is everywhere. I don't care about everywhere. I care about Microsoft, and I care about Windows, and this is the stuff I focus on. Look, we can quibble over what's an ad, what's not an ad, but there's a lot
of
stuff.
It's not an ad for your local mortuary, right? Or, you know, toilet paper.
Well, listen, it's going to get there. You may remember, I think it was last year, we had Chris Capicella on at the end of the year show. Yeah. We discussed this notion of, I said, I would pay not to have this junk on my PC. And his answer, which I thought was very interesting, was, if we allowed you to pay not to have this stuff, then we would be admitting that this stuff is
that we're
bad.
We're doing it.
But I guess I understand that argument, but consider something like you buy a new Kindle, and one of the options, the cheapest one you can get is, they call it with special offers, which is another cute way of saying ads, right?
Yeah.
And the idea is you get ads on your lock screen, which honestly are fairly non-intrusive. You click past it, or however you get by it, and then your experience is normal. Or you can give them, I don't know, a small amount of money, 15, 20 bucks.
It's not much. It is. Yeah.
It's not much.
For the life of the device. Yeah.
Yeah. So look, I wanted to say, I'm not ranting here. In other words, I'm just not going off the cuff about some nonsense thing. I understand that Windows has evolved over the years. It's no longer something that people are paying for on a fairly regular basis. And whether you knew you were doing it or not, whenever you upgraded to a new PC, you were buying a new version of Windows. And up through Windows 8, whatever, you know, Windows 8, certainly, you paid to get a new version of Windows, right? So the Slippery Slope article that I'm referencing I go back and reread it, and it has this reference to Microsoft had a deal when Windows 8 first came out that this thing that normally would cost, you know, $99 or $129 for a limited time is going to be $40 for an upgrade, which at the time seemed like a good price. Today, no one would pay even $20 for a Windows upgrade, but whatever. So this situation's changed. PCs last longer. Windows 10, now Windows 11, by and large, is free as an upgrade. So if you already have a, well, it's a little more complicated today, but if you have a compatible computer, you could upgrade from 8 to 10, possibly to 11, probably not, but you could in many cases do that.
So is that the justification? We're not making money, so we got to give you ads.
That's literally the justification. This is something that came up in the recent conference call about earnings.
I guess
earnings.
That makes sense.
So
just to play devil's advocate, I think you can say, well, if it's a recommendation for a Microsoft product or a tip for a Microsoft product, that's something lower, less than an ad for a Frisbee. I mean, it's not, right? Or no?
I guess. It really is. In other words,
just as annoying to you if it says, hey, you know, Microsoft Word is 50% off right now.
I don't know if I have a gradient scale for annoyance, but I would just say that anything that Windows is a productivity tool, right?
Right.
You don't use it to use it. You use it to get something done. You're using Microsoft Word, Microsoft Teams, Adobe Photoshop, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter. Anything that gets in the way of that is an annoyance. And so I guess the issue I have with this stuff is it changed. It's, you know, based on what we're talking about. The suggestion bit that's built into Windows 11, actually, you can turn that off. But one of the other things that's happened with Windows 11 is they don't sync as many settings. And that's a setting that has never sunk or has never synced.
Yeah.
They
want you to turn it off everywhere. They don't want to make it easy. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So there's that bit to it.
That's a dark pattern, by the way, right? That's a dark pattern.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. I got an ad in Teams for some Excel feature. After I'd started a video meeting with somebody.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's wrong.
I posted that on, you know, I tweeted about it, and people are like, well, I don't know what you're complaining about. Maybe you want to know about this feature.
I
do. But maybe I don't want to know about it when I'm in the middle of a meeting, which is, that's just, you know.
It's also more, I have a scale of gradient of annoyance. That makes it higher. Yeah. That also makes it higher if I already have Excel, which I do. Why are you should know that.
Also, what if you already are using this feature and are, in fact, a master of Excel? And it's a little confusing given all the telemetry data that goes back to Microsoft that they don't know that.
Yeah.
So it's dumb advertising. It's intrusive advertising. It's an annoyance in some cases that you can't turn off right now. In some, you can. Of course. You can't come up with a general statement that's true of all of it, but that's part of the problem. There's so many different ways that this thing can kind of get in your face. There's little pop-ups that come up and, you know, did you know you could do this? It's like, yeah, thanks. I'm writing a book about this product. I do know that.
And go away.
You know, whatever. I get that you're not a mind reader, but I feel like Google would have handled that one a little more effectively.
Where does it appear? So it's on the, does it appear on the
everywhere.
Search start menu?
Yep. That's the search highlights is the, is one of the best examples of this problem right now. Because, and the way I've described this is you go to search for a reason. You're trying to search either for files or apps on your local computer. A lot of people actually use it to search the web. I don't recommend that or do that myself, but that is a thing you can do with it. And when the search pane comes up, there's all this gunk on the side about, hey, here's what's happening today in the world. And did you know this celebrity is getting divorced from this celebrity? And it distracts you.
Yes.
And I think the worst thing you can do to someone who's trying to get work done is distract them.
Yep.
And it's so against the point of the search that it can be so annoying, depending on your personality type or how tired you are that day, whatever it is. I've opened this thing, been annoyed by what it was, and then forgot why I was there.
Yeah. Context switch.
And I'm sorry, but that's a huge problem. Yep. So I have a tip for how you can turn it off. It's not that hard. But again, the next time you use a computer, sign in somewhere else, it's going to come right back. It's one of 20 things, let's say, out in the system, you know, in various places. It's getting worse over time, I think, is the point. The point of my slippery slope comment was, well, it's like the little snowball going down the hill. By the time it reaches the town, it's the size of Godzilla, and it's going to take out the entire place. And that's what's happened. You know, it's gotten worse. The ads have slipped, you know, because think the complaints, the obvious complaints back in Windows 8 timeframe was, well, Paul, these apps are in ads. And in the beginning, they were way at the end of the apps. I'm sorry. The ads would be like, remember, they were like these horizontally scrolling experiences that had 15 minutes of fame and then they got rid of them. But the ads in the beginning were way down the end of this thing. Like, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal was in Windows 8.1 or in some interim time period, they moved up to the front and then they were everywhere. And then in Windows 10 and now worse in Windows 11, they've left the apps. They're out in the world. They've escaped their cages. They've become sentient. They're in Windows. They're in the start menu. They're in little pop-ups. They're in the taskbar in some cases. They're in File Explorer in some cases. They're in settings in some cases. They're everywhere. And it's, like I said, I get it. It's free. We didn't pay anything for this. They're looking at the books. They're saying, look, we got to make some more money from these people. How do we do that? There are different ways. I guess what I'm arguing is maybe this isn't the best way, but I'm also saying we need to think about this a little more deeply and stop kind of quibbling about whether they're ads or not, or that some are bad and some are good or whatever, and say, look, we need to come to an understanding as a community, as a group of users, by the way, over a billion users, that we don't like this. And is there some way we could let's do something to fix this, like whatever it might be. And I still think that they should have the option where you pay some amount. It could be per year. It could be part of your Microsoft 365 subscription where you don't see this stuff. Interestingly, I was racing to try to get these published before we started the show today and I just missed it, but I've written a couple of chapters for the book in the accounts section. So one of the chapters is Microsoft accounts, you know, whatever. The other one is work, or what Microsoft calls work or school accounts. And these are Azure Active Directory accounts, what a lot of people might think are Microsoft 365 accounts or Microsoft 365 commercial accounts. You can sign into Windows with an Azure Active Directory account, right? So if you have, Microsoft 365 Business Premium, but if I had Business Basic or whatever the other options are, I can use that email address. And I can use it to sign into Windows. And when you do that, you actually get a cleaner experience. Oh, there are less ads. There aren't no ads. This right. is not no ads, but it's a step in the right direction. So one of the forms of ads that's in Windows that a lot of people don't see as ads and don't really understand is when you bring up your start menu, there's a bunch of icons there for apps, some of which are not even on your computer. So the apps referencing are things like Facebook and Instagram and Messenger, TikTok, stuff like that. Amazon Prime is one of Amazon Prime Video, I think, is one. Spotify is one. Spotify is actually the most nefarious one. If you click on one of those icons, that app will then install from the store. It's not actually on your computer. It's just a stub. And then the app will run. So it's there as an enticement to get you to do it. Like you see, like, oh, look, Spotify's there. That's neat. Maybe I can use Spotify. And you can. And there's a free version, right? You know, you could use it. But this is a financial transaction between that company and Microsoft. It's there as a promotion. That's you didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
It's an ad. Well, you know, like,
that's,
again.
That's fair. If somebody's paying Microsoft, there is no question. That's an ad.
So in the when you sign in with an Azure Active Directory account, those apps are not in the start menu.
Interesting.
They're not there.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's one of the small changes. When you run Microsoft Edge for the first time as any user, you go through a little wizard. It says stuff like, hey, would you like to keep your settings and bookmarks and everything in sync? Yeah, of course I would. Would you like to import data from your Google Chrome without installing Chrome? Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. That doesn't matter. And then the next one says, let's make the web work for you. And that is not what that screen is. This is, let's make the web work for Microsoft. If you click yes to this thing, Microsoft is going to track you around the internet and sell your data to advertisers, and it's going to do it under the guise of providing targeted advertising for you, like that's some kind of a benefit. It doesn't improve the search results of Bing. It doesn't make MSN work better for you. It doesn't do any of that stuff. It literally just grants them permission to track you. That screen is not present when you sign in with an Azure Active Directory screen. It goes, it's not there. Now, whether or not it's tracking in the background is, I guess, is a conversation we could have. But there are other differences. And by and large, it's a little cleaner. If you bring up Microsoft Edge, for example, to their default home screen slash new tab screen or new tab page, whatever, You'll see a horrifically complicated page with all kinds of things in it. But one of the things is this giant news feed that's a lot like the widgets interface in Windows 11. And this thing is all Microsoft advertising-based stuff. So it's usually kind of low-quality sources of information. This celebrity did this with this celebrity. Click on the story. It's full of ads. Microsoft is getting a kickback because it's all done through the MSN and Microsoft Advertising Services. That is actually still there, right? So you can turn it off. You can continue using Edge. You can turn that off. But that's an example of something that doesn't change when you go to a commercial, what I'll call a commercial account. It's a little simpler. But so that's not a panacea. Like, that's not going to solve the problem. It's like, well, I could pay Microsoft. I could pay them more for this Azure Active Directory, well, Microsoft 365 commercial account. I could sign in with that. And then I'll see less of the garbage. And yeah, you will. But you know what? Those suggestions still come up, right? And other forms of advertising, probably. I've only used, been doing this for the past month or so. I'm not really sure 100% what all the changes are, but or the differences are. But it's cleaner, but it's not clean. What I would like is, Microsoft, please, let me raise the price of Microsoft 365 family. Raise the price of every one of your subscriptions by $20 and say, this is the ad-free version, you know? And when I say I don't want suggestions, sync it to my Microsoft account so the next time I sign in, I don't have to do that again. I would pay for that service. And I don't know how many people would. I mean, maybe it wouldn't be a huge moneymaker. But you know what? When you compare what Microsoft could possibly make from these terrible interruptions that just annoy people and probably don't result in many sales, it's still going to be more money than what they're doing now. Like, it's still going to be a better option.
Right.
I just wish they would do this.
Everybody's doing it. I mean, it's weird. No, it's weird though.
I hate that excuse.
Do you like Philip K. Dick? Because he one of the great science fiction authors of the 50s.
Dream of Sheep. And,
yeah. And he was like you, only in the 50s.
Yeah.
He wrote a short story called Sales Pitch where the guy actually goes crazy at the end because there's so many ads all the time. And the guy at the end goes crazy because there's a robot that refuses to take no for an answer. And says, no, it's just like Windows. No, you really want this? No. And the guy, he does so many stories about that. So this was a concern. This has been a concern forever, but it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I am now seeing, I don't want it. I'm seeing ads for the new Avatar movie on every Amazon thing that has a screen on it, all the Echo shows and stuff. And partly that's because Amazon lost $10 billion on Echo last year. It turns out to be a terrible business. But sure. I don't think Microsoft's losing money on Windows, or are they? I mean,
no, but it's diminishing, right? This is remember that Windows was once their biggest business, and then it was okay. Well, it's one of their three biggest businesses, and now it's just declining, and it's in decline. And when you see parts of Microsoft that are growing almost exponentially, not really, but things like Azure that are growing very fast because they're newer businesses, you know, Microsoft obviously looks at that and says, okay, well, how can we get Windows to be like that? And we've seen the results of some of that stuff. Some of it is make Windows behave like an online service, which I think has had mixed results. Although, honestly, that's starting to get there. But in the beginning, that was a disaster. And, you know, part of it is the thing we saw in Windows 8, which was, look, we see this successful thing over here. Can we replicate that in Windows somehow? Yeah. And in that case, we're talking about ads and mobile apps, you know, and sort of a born out of a jealousy of companies like Apple and Google that frankly killed them in that space and did really, really well. And are still doing really, really well. It bugs me that Microsoft doesn't pursue the premium route that Apple typically has chosen and offer that as one possibility.
I bet instead, Apple just starts doing it eventually, though. I really do.
Oh, totally.
I mean, Apple's already getting hits for putting ads in the App Store on iOS, right? And people are getting mad at it. And there's all sorts of privacy implications.
Oh, by the way, want to talk ads? So here's an interesting comparison, right? I just brought up a new Pixel phone, and when you bring up a new Pixel phone, there are, I want to say, 8 icons on the home screen. That's it. Now, they're 100% Google apps. I mean,
yeah, all the Google apps.
They're all Google apps. But bring up a new iPhone and count the number of screens and number of apps that are on the home screen. It's something like 47.
Wow.
Right? And it is a crazy number of apps. It's apps like that most people logically would never want to use. Like what's their music editor app, whatever that's called,
GarageBand. You probably see GarageBand. Facebook on there, I would bet they, because Facebook used to come with iPhones.
I'm not sure about that, but, it, but I'm just talking.
It's mostly Apple
apps.
Stuff. Like, huh.
It's yeah. a spam of pages of Apple apps. And, you know, a lot, you know, a lot of people, Apple is the high end experience, you know, the luxury experience. Yeah. Okay. But like that, that in that one particular area, that's not really true. And I,
well, they're going to say, I can channel them. They're going to say, well, if we don't put any apps on the front page, people say, well, what do I do with this? What do I do with this phone? It's blank. I mean,
so in 2007, that was true. Yeah. And by the way, every one of the apps on the phone probably fit on the homepage.
Yeah.
In 2022, there are a billion people who using iPhones now. Yeah. Most of them have used multiple iPhones. There's almost no one coming to iPhone that doesn't understand either exactly what's on there and how it works, or exactly what's on any smartphone and how they work generally. Like, there's no such thing as new people now. You'd have to, like, parachute into the Amazon and be like, look, here's a magic device. We put icons
where
on
the front. Where are the apps?
We know,
I don't know what to
you
do.
You will never figure it out otherwise. Yeah. But there's no one like that left. So it's just advertising.
Well, truthfully, if you're coming from one iPhone to the next, I never see that. It's funny that you mentioned this because I never see it. I just have my apps come zipping over.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, fair enough.
But anyway, I agree with you. This is the way of the world moving forward, is more and more ads all the time.
I have a link in notes and see if you can bring this up. The link where it says it's about to get even worse is a story from GHacks that highlights two things that have been occurring in the Windows Insider program. And the first is that suggestion thing, right? It's that link right there. So what that is there's no good name for this thing. It's kind of the account flyout or whatever. So when you click your user account in the start menu, you see the options that are there, except that there's an additional option at the top that says back up your files.
Oh, and that's really a OneDrive plug.
That's a suggestion. Yeah. And it's like, okay. All right. We can argue whether that's an advertisement or whatever, but I think what we should agree on is why is it there? Like aren't there not acceptable ways to promote things to people? You know, for example, I'm not holding up Chromebook or Chrome OS as kind of the way to do anything, but when you reboot that thing because you have a new version, the first thing that comes up is here's what's new. It's a cute little app and it shows you what's new in the new version. And you can just close it if you don't want it. It's the right time to show it, you know? And I don't know if there is, but if there isn't, there should be a little checkbox that says, don't ever show me this again.
I don't want to see it.
You know, they probably don't do that. But, you know, that's the right way to handle this kind of thing. It's the other one that's gross, though. If you scroll down to the picture of the start screen, or the start menu, sorry, you'll see those two. It says common website. They're going to do for websites what they've done for apps. So if you look at the top part of that, you'll see Spotify, Disney Plus, Prime Video, and TikTok are examples of companies that are paying to be there. And now what you're seeing is examples of web companies that are paying to be there, Etsy and Twitter. And this is just a theoretical thing. Like I don't think Twitter could afford to pay for this right now.
Not anymore. But these are examples. Might have been there in the past.
But you get the idea. The idea is, you know, you want to reach a billion eyeballs? Get your website in the start menu. They'll see it when the first thing that comes up when they boot in, it's open automatically. You know,
Recently added files. I don't see any.
No. It's not yet. They're testing
this is
it
coming.
Preview. Yeah, this is coming. This is coming.
Okay.
Obviously,
I don't
like that. When you're in marketing, you can kind of spin something to make it sound positive. I've argued with this recommended area that what this should be is what you see in the Office app, soon to be the Microsoft 365 app, which is just recent documents, right? Because if this thing was really about productivity, all you would see are those things that are below those two icons, which are the things I was working on most recently that I might want to go back and work on again. Not a distraction. This is kind of doing the start menu what Search Highlights does the search box, which is, I've come here to find my expense notes, but oh, look, there's Etsy. What was I doing again? You know, it's like you get lost in something that has nothing to do with the reason you're using Windows, with the reason you brought up this interface, and you're being led down a path that has nothing to do with any choice you've ever made. And I worry about this.
When they first set up Windows, take Solitaire and Minesweeper off because they don't want to be distracted by that. I mean,
So here we go.
We should all go back to the Tandy Model 100 and write our novels on those.
You know, There were no ads in the command line. That's no, all I'm saying.
There weren't. And Linux doesn't have ads, although this briefly was a problem with Ubuntu. They put in ads for their Ubuntu One, and they for Amazon. They had an Amazon icon in the when you first booted in the start menu.
Interesting.
In the dock. Yeah, but well, people got pretty upset, and Ubuntu stopped doing it.
People probably forget this, but because Microsoft got in antitrust trouble with Internet Explorer and Windows 95, and also with MSN, which is one of those big threats that never really congealed into anything bad. But, CompuServe, America Online, whatever the IBM thing was called, they were also concerned about MSN. They went to the Justice Department. They went to the FTC. They complained. And they got a concession from Microsoft where other online services would have icons on the desktop so you could make a choice. You know, that was the thing they did. And I'm sure from Microsoft's perspective in the day, because they were so dominant, they were like, yeah, put these stupid things up there and everyone's going to choose ours anyway. And as you know, we're all using MSN today. So that worked out great. But that was an example. Back then, Microsoft had to be forced to put this stuff into the operating system. Today, we have to be forced to deal with it because they're putting it in everywhere. And it's, like I said, it's getting worse. It's gotten worse and it will continue to get worse. And I looked at the Twitter thing.
Search for slippery slope from Thurrott.
So I tweet about this all the time and it's funny. I actually used the exact same quote 3 years ago that I just used this week.
It's still slippery.
That's my favorite one. Wait, go back up. It says, like, who has two thumbs and has used the term slippery slope to describe the ads in Windows back in 2012. Right. This guy.
This guy. And that was 2018. That was 2018.
Yeah. Listen, this is the only thing I've ever been right about. So I've been kind of pumping it a little hard.
slippery slope. You say this a lot.
Because that's what it is. It's perfect.
Good. It's the right phrase. It's the mot juste. All right. Yeah. I want to take a break. We're going to talk about Windows 11.
Alrighty.
In just a little bit.
That sounds like a thing I've heard of.
I've heard of it. Yeah, I wonder. And by the way, Chris Cappicella apparently is not coming on the show with us this year. Maybe because of this.
Check on that. No. I don't think so.
No, he's not. He's not sensitive in that regard. I mean, I think he's.
No, in fact.
Yeah. He appreciates the. But I don't think we're going to do it at the end of the year, which is too bad. Because
I'll find out for sure. But
now
I
bought
did,
that
I
stupid
that
Microsoft Clippy ugly Christmas sweater for no reason at all.
Well, it's still a nice prop to have for the show.
Actually, I was surprised because I expected it to be like kind of a cheap, scratchy sweater like you'd get from Shinesty or something. And it's actually very nice.
Yeah, it is.
So
nice.
I will be wearing it all through December.
Okay, I'll wear it once. I got to figure out when, but whatever. Probably the lot. Whatever.
Come on, we should both wear it. We'll be twinsies.
I get so hot in these things, though. You know,
it would be a little. I have to say, a little strange. Are Paul and Leo wearing matching sweaters?
Did you guys call each other before the show?
That's a little weird. I don't want to say anything. Our show today brought to you by SecureWorks. I love SecureWorks. They're a leader in cybersecurity. I'm sure you've heard the name by now. They build solutions for security experts by security experts. What do they have? SecureWorks offers superior threat detection and rapid incident response, all while making sure that their customers are never locked into a single vendor. This is the team you want on your side. SecureWorks offers something really cool, an open extended detection and response platform. It's called Taegis XDR. And this is, boy, if you don't have it, you need it. This year, cybercrime will cost the world $7 trillion, with a T. By 2025, that figure is going to grow to $10.5 trillion. Last year, ransomware, $20 billion in damages, attacks once every 11 seconds. In 2031, it's projected to cost $265 billion and strike every 2 seconds. Make sure your organization is not the next victim. With SecureWorks Taegis XDR. SecureWorks Taegis provides superior detection, identifying more than, this is kind of mind-boggling, 470 billion security events every day. Every day. Prioritizing the true positive alerts, eliminating alert noise, but giving you the actionable information so you can focus on the real threat. In addition, Taegis offers unmatched response, automated response detection, and action. So those threats are eliminated before they can do any damage. With SecureWorks Taegis Managed XDR, you can easily leverage SecureWorks experts to investigate and respond to threats on your behalf. That means you can cut dwell times, decrease operational burden, reduce cost. And with 24/7 by 365 day a year coverage, whether you experience a Christmas Day security event or half your team is out sick, you can trust SecureWorks is behind you. Many companies facing a shortage of security talent, SecureWorks acts as an extension of your security team on day one, alleviating cybersecurity talent gaps. It allows you to customize the approach and the coverage level you need so you get just what you want. And I got to tell you, get a piece of paper and write down this number. If you've already found an intruder in your system, no, don't worry. Just call 1-800-BREACHED. 1-800-BREACHED. Put it on next to your computer. Put it in your wallet. You're going to want to have this number. Even if you're not a SecureWorks customer, 1-800-BREACHED will connect you with the SecureWorks Emergency Incident Response Team. They can give you immediate assistance 24/7, responding to and remediating a possible cyber incident or data breach. At SecureWorks, you can learn more about the ways today's threat environment is evolving, the risks it can present your organization. That includes case studies, reports from their incredible counter-threat unit, and more. Visit SecureWorks.com/twit to get a free trial of Taegis XDR. That's SecureWorks.com/twit. SecureWorks, defending every corner of cyberspace. Please use that address so they know you saw it on Windows Weekly, SecureWorks.com/twit. Thank you, SecureWorks. All right, now it's time to talk about Windows 11.
Yes.
If you choose. If you should choose.
Yeah, that's how I would prefer only to talk about Windows 11.
And it's fine. New advertising features.
That's right. The advertising engine that is Windows 11. Yeah. So since we spoke last week, there's been one new build to the dev channel. And this is our chance to see features, you know, that may or may not show up in the future. I think most of these are probably going to show up in the future. Some of them, oddly, you know, that most people probably know there's a dev channel, there's a beta channel, there's a release preview channel. You would assume, because you're logical and you can think, that these features would appear first in dev, make their way to beta, and
Work their way up.
You know, that's not how it always works. So some of the features that they just released into the dev channel actually debuted previously in the beta channel for some reason. So I think energy recommendations might be new. This is something we're starting to see throughout Windows. This notion of rethinking interfaces and putting things together in one place. So the energy efficiency settings, or I should say energy recommendation settings that are coming to the settings app will probably make a bunch of changes with just one checkbox kind of thing, which I think is kind of smart. Microsoft's pushing the green leaf thing a little heavily in Windows these days, but you know, our data centers are operating at peak efficiency and you don't have to worry about us destroying the atmosphere with all of our fumes. We're going to deliver these updates as slow as we can. Don't you worry about that. You see it in the task manager. We talked about efficiency mode last week. And now you're going to see it in power and battery settings as this energy recommendation. And this is sort of like when you do a route in Google Maps and it says, hey, do you want to take the most efficient route? And you're like, no, I'd like to get there today, but thanks. Thanks for giving me that choice. I think I've talked about this a little bit in the past. I think a lot of people listening to this show especially would say, yeah, I'm not really looking for energy efficiency. I want this thing to work as well as it can, you know, but it's a choice you'd be able to make. And I think it's a good thing to have in there. That's fine. We also talked about some of the task manager stuff, I think a week or two ago. This is the search box. There's better support for the Windows 11 theming. So, you know, there's dark and light mode and an automatic based on whatever the theme is. So it's going to offer that. We did talk about this. This is the thing where you can show the PID, remember, and the status and all that stuff. You can show the different columns and so forth. Efficiency mode is getting a little communications update. They're not actually changing efficiency mode. I'm not sure I agree with this too much, but efficiency mode today, like I said before, is really just about lowering process priority. And the point of that is to stop hammering the CPU with whatever this app process is, so that hopefully it comes back from being hung. But they're promoting it as a way to improve power efficiency, which, yes, technically, if you're not hammering the CPU, it will take up less energy and will be better for the environment. But really, this is a troubleshooting tool to get your, you know, to get the system back from being hung. I mean, that's the point of it. So whatever. There's a new suggested action. So remember when suggested actions, which is curiously hard to say, debuted in 22H2 about a month or two ago, or sometime in the past month and a half. There were only three times that this thing would ever come up. It would come up on dates and times, and that would, the suggested action would be something about doing a new event in calendar. Or you could do a phone number and select that, copy that to the clipboard. It would say, hey, do you want to call this number? And that makes sense. So they're adding, I'll call it a third or fourth, depending on how many you think that is. They're adding a new suggested action in the future. And this is for Bing search. Of course it is. So you can select text in any app that supports text, copy it to the clipboard. The suggested action will come up. It will say search whatever the copy text was using Edge, of course, and using Bing, of course. But okay, that's fine. I would imagine the way things that go and the way Microsoft, the way the things, I'm sorry, the way that Microsoft does things, we're going to see an API or an SDK for suggested actions. We'll see third-party suggested actions in the future. And we'll see if anyone ever uses it, but it's kind of interesting. I think I mentioned this a little while ago, but I've been writing about the accounts settings in Windows 11. There is all kinds of accounts that are supported by the system. You can have Microsoft accounts, work or school accounts, and offline accounts, or what we used to call local accounts, which I think of as sign-in accounts because you can sign into Windows with those things. You can add other sign-in accounts and boot into different accounts. You can have multiple people on the same computer. You can have online accounts, which are things like email addresses, calendars, and things like that you might use with the apps in Windows or with other apps, and those can be configured inside of your Microsoft account or inside of your work or school account. That's kind of cool. And the way Windows works is a little bit different depending on which type of account you're using or which type of accounts you're connecting, but this is all done through account settings. And so if you look at account settings, I should just look at
it. It's kind of like mobile, right? I mean, that's what mobile does.
Yeah.
You associate all those accounts with your.
Yeah. This is going to be a several episode run on Hands-On Windows where we talk about this stuff.
Oh, because
Because it's really interesting. Like I mentioned earlier that you can sign in with a Microsoft 365 commercial account. It changes things. And so that's kind of interesting, you know, but you could also just, you have your own computer and maybe you're at a school or you're at a workplace and you want to connect to resources associated with that organization, whatever it is. And you can connect a work or school account to your Microsoft account on a particular Windows PC. Some amount of policy will come down from that organization because obviously they want to protect their data. But once you do that, you can gain access to resources from that organization. Maybe they remotely install apps. You can access the OneDrive that's associated with that account, email and calendar, obviously, stuff like that. So there's all kinds of ways you can, you know, configure this stuff. I think for the layperson, the accounts settings interface is a little dense and a little hard to find out. There's also stuff I haven't talked about, like family accounts and all kinds of other stuff you can do, but it's a little complex. But they're turning it into, this is again part of the evolution. I think they're trying to make this make a little more sense. And they're also trying to make it so that you can do as much as possible from the one place rather than having to go up to the web to do so much. And yet a lot of the stuff that's in here, you'll click on it and what happens is a web browser opens because a lot of the settings that you have for your account are actually up in the web somewhere. So
it's kind of interesting. So it's really two different things. It's one, so that single machine now has access to all your stuff, but it also makes your stuff more portable because you can go sit down, kind of like a Chromebook. You can go sit down, log in, and now you have access to stuff too. So I think this makes sense. I bemoan a little bit because we're seeing it on Mac really badly. The move toward putting more mobile features on desktop. You know, Microsoft's been down that road, I guess, with the Windows 8. But
I mean, this is a kind of a side topic, but I think the mistake Apple has made so far is Apple still relies on what I will call local accounts. So the thing that you sign into on a Mac is just an account
which
create.
We like.
It's called Paul.
Yeah.
You know, which we'd like, but it's also not as sophisticated and secure as an online account. So I think for normal people, you know, I understand like power users are going to want like a local account. I get that kind of thing. But You know, my mother, my sister, my, you know, my non-technical friends, whoever, normal people.
Yeah, they just log into a Microsoft account. Because it takes everything with you. It syncs it all
up.
And
Apple does a good job of enforcing like 2FA. Microsoft makes it optional, but if you protect your account correctly, and use that to sign into a device, it's actually a more secure way to do it. And in the Apple ecosystem, you benefit from that kind of cross-device sync capability, which I think is pretty cool. I'm surprised they haven't made sign into my Apple account the default option. You know, I know you connect an Apple account to the account you create, but that's kind of an old-fashioned way of doing it. And it's the way Microsoft used to do it back in Windows 7. And since in Windows 8, we've had the ability just to sign in directly with a Microsoft account. I mean, I know people don't like that it's forced on them now, but it is the right choice for most people, you know? Anyway, this is a side conversation, but because we are using these accounts, it makes sense that you should be able to manage that account in the system. And I would say on an Apple device, you do, right? You don't go to an Apple device, like you're not on an iPhone and you're in like the 17th level of settings and you click on something, it opens a web page. Like everything's in there. And that's not actually true in Windows. And so I think what they're evolving here is the ability to manage more of your Microsoft account settings in Windows and not have to go to the web. Although there's a lot of work to do there. So anyway, in the dev build, there's another step in that direction, but it's not 100%.
It's funny.
You'll get it there.
You know, I always forget that we have a proponents of privacy purists and they want a local account. But for most people, really, in fact, for me, I log into my Microsoft account because it's got all my settings, everything. It's all in there. It's fast and easy.
Yeah. Right. Actually, since you brought that up, one bit of advice of mine has changed with regards to how you initially configure a computer. Previous to about a month ago, I would have said there's a screen that says here's some privacy settings. And it's like this nonsense screen of like seven options. And I used to say, look, just leave them all checked. Don't worry about it. Look at that stuff later. There's a lot more information you can go through. The thing is, once I actually went through every single thing you can configure for privacy in Windows 11, and the things I say you should configure based on just analyzing what's there are literally the seven things that are in that first screen. So actually, if you're setting up a new Windows 11 computer, just unclick every one of those things. Just turn them all off, because that's actually most of what you want to do. This is the type of thing like, you know, using unique advertising ID, let Microsoft, it doesn't say it this way, but let Microsoft track you around, et cetera, et cetera. The only one you might want to turn on would be location settings. Although, you know, privacy averse people would not want that on either, but there are reasons to have location settings on. But like mobile setting systems, you can do that app by app. So anyway. So you got to stop doing that to me. All these things I'm working on that are not really related to this topic.
I'm distracting you. I apologize.
No, it's good. It's okay.
I will get out of your way. No.
It's good. I'm easily distracted, but this stuff will come out in a more formal way sometime soon. So for example, I will write an article about what I just said. I will write an article about the experience of using Windows 11 with a work or school account. That's a little more editorialized than just like, here's how you do it, which is what the book typically is. It's just interesting in the process of writing this, there's new things that occur that don't get any press at all. Yeah. One of the things I've complained about related to like a Microsoft account is setting sync has gone way downhill since Windows 10. Well, since Windows 8, especially, but since Windows, it's gone down. It went down in Windows 10. It went down further in Windows 11. Windows 11 doesn't sync your desktop wallpaper, your theme, which is kind of strange. They don't use the term setting sync anymore, and they use a term that's so unfortunate, but there's a term they use now, which is Windows Backup. Windows Backup is a legacy application for doing system backup and restore. But now they're using it's like Windows Backup with a small b, and the idea here is that this is some set of features that are designed to sync and or backup your data in some way between computers. So like OneDrive folder sync, which is actually folder backup, falls under this category. The ability to remember your apps that you have installed. So if you restore the computer later, you might or might not want all those apps to come back automatically as one of those features. But the third one is called Remember My Preferences. And this is what used to be Setting Sync. And it's like four things. It's really, it's just not what
remember
it used
a
to
couple
be.
Of my a couple of my preferences yeah. just a few exactly. This is how many pages in the Field Guide to Windows 11
so far? It's at 475 right now.
Oh, it's not done though. It's going to be thousands. No. That's why,
at least
right?
Yeah. Yep.
But it's also good because that's why people would buy a book like that. They want a reference to all these things.
I'm actually semi-fascinated that so many little things have changed. When you think about kind of back-end features like security or privacy or accounts or what else falls into this category? Help and recovery, you know, that kind of stuff. Those UIs, when you look at them in Windows 11, they're the old UI. In fact, some of the UIs date back to Windows 8. They survived all the way through Windows 10. They never changed. And they're in Windows 11, and they're really old-fashioned looking now. And yet, when you dive deeper into each of these, not all of them, but a lot of them, there are actually these little differences. Like Setting Sync is a great example. The way that Reset This PC works is a little different than it used to be. It looks exactly the same, but it's actually it's a little different. They got rid of a tool that was called Fresh Start, which used to be available from the Windows security app, is gone. And because Reset This PC now does what that app used to do.
Oh, Fresh Start.
Lots of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but you could still
do it. Well, you can do it, but you can do
it.
You can still do it. No, you can still do it. You can,
It's a different name. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
What was the thing? It wasn't Fresh Start then. It was where you rebooted and the whole thing it would start over and you'd have a brand new fresh.
Yeah, so both of those did. So Reset This PC, which you could do a refresh or a reset, and then Fresh Start. And the idea behind Fresh Start was you would download the Windows image from Microsoft, and what it wouldn't do is bring back all of the stuff that your PC maker put on it from by default. Now that's built into Reset This PC.
That's too bad.
No, it's
because it's taken from the partition, right? It's not taken from the cloud.
Well, because the PC maker, so you buy a PC from Dell or HP, Lenovo, whatever, they can customize the image that's on there. So when you reset it, it comes back with all their apps.
Which I guess people want. It's like, put it back to the factory.
Well, this is, everything in life is a double-edged sword, right? So one of the things you don't get when you do this, if you cut that stuff out, is you might not get all the drivers, right? So you'll get them eventually. Like a Windows update will have a bunch of them depending on the PC. Sometimes you might have to download like a Lenovo Vantage app or HP Support Center or whatever it's called. You know, Dell has an app. And you'll be able to use that to get the drivers. Hopefully one of those drivers won't be your Wi-Fi driver, but usually not. But it's, you know, it's kind of a six to one half dozen. I mean, you'll lose something either way, I guess. It's but at least you have the choice. You have the choice.
Yeah. And they're not using Fresh Start anymore because that's kitty litter.
Well, it's the features that made Fresh Start unique, which were minor, are all available.
That's the kitty litter where every time the cat takes a step, a new freshness is released or something. I remember. You see how those ads work? They work, Paul.
It's like the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer wants to invent a perfume that smells like when you came out of the ocean.
That would be good.
But then he brings it to a marketer and they says, you know, the first thing you do when you get out of the ocean is you take a shower. Nobody wants to smell like that. What are you talking about?
You know? No, that's a good point.
Yeah. No, I know. It's interesting because I thought that was a good idea, too. And then you hear that, you're like, oh, right.
Yeah. Hey, I'm really excited about this next item because and I'm confused. So I really want your clarification because WSL is no longer a beta product, right? It's out of beta.
That's right.
And I think you can run not just command line apps, but you now can run Linux GUI apps. Am I right?
That's right. Yep. Across Windows 10 and 11.
Well,
and
what?
This is interesting on a number of levels. They haven't communicated this very well, and it's in a transitionary state, which we've seen before. So you think about something like Windows PowerShell is, I think, maybe the best example. There's nothing that's exactly the same, but Windows PowerShell, actually, I'm going to get it wrong because I got to make sure that's right. Yeah. So Windows PowerShell is something that has come with Windows for a long time. When you run Windows PowerShell, which comes up in the terminal app now on Windows 11, but I believe it's the default environment. The thing it says right at the top is install the latest PowerShell for new features and improvements, and it gives you an address to go to. And when you click on that address, let's see, actually, no, it's not working on my computer for some reason, so I'm going to let that sit for a moment, but it will. It lets you download a more modern or more up-to-date version of PowerShell that I guess is just called PowerShell as opposed to Windows PowerShell. So WSL today, WSL debuted as a thing that was built into Windows, had to be manually installed.
Right.
Initially, I think it had to be installed from a command line, yeah. Which for a lot of people, very
from
daunting.
The shell, yeah.
Right. Then they made a version of it available in the store. Mm-hmm. And I should say, regardless of the version that was in the store, that's still in the store, all of the Linux distributions you could install into it were always available from the store.
Right.
So it was kind of a unique thing. It's like,
right.
Here's a command line app that you... You get updates or you get function or features for through the store, which is a little goofy. But now, in the past two months, I'd say the Windows subsystem for Windows came out of beta, so it's considered fully supported, generally available. It's in Windows, it's just built into Windows. But going forward, they're going to make the store version the version. That's where all the updates are going to go, right? So the version of Windows will be supported for the lifetime of whatever version of Windows it's in. So the one that shipped in Windows 11 a year ago is probably going to be supported for 9 more years. But the version that they're going forward with is the version you get in the store. And that version is going to get all the new, whatever new features might happen. I don't know what those might be, but.
So I see it now in the store.
PowerShell.
Yeah. I always worry with the store. Oh, good. It says from Microsoft Corporation. Okay. It's got a weird Tux logo. It's not the real Tux. It's like a blue Tux, which is weird. So Linux users are going to be puzzled a little bit by that. But then, if you search for Linux, you'll see other distros among a lot of other things, but you'll see other distros as well, like SUSE and Ubuntu.
Right.
And yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have to install a Linux after you install the WSL from the store? Or does it install?
So this just happened today. I haven't done this recently. So this is another thing I'll be writing about soon. Yeah. But yeah, you have to have some command line, obviously.
Right.
I feel like Microsoft has a partnership with Ubuntu where they're
install Ubuntu, but let me see. Windows subsystems.
They are the preferred, Linux provider of the Philadelphia Eagles, something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's something like that.
I'm looking at the entry and it doesn't say anything about what distro you get. In fact, in the graphic, it shows Debian. It shows.
Yeah, of course. They're
going to
show
it. In the graphic on the thing, it shows a variety of Linuxes, Kali Linux, SUSE.
Right.
Maybe it's agnostic, but then you have to. It probably will tell you.
But which one's first?
I have it already installed. I have it already installed.
And you would have installed whatever distribution.
Yeah, I already installed. I can't remember. I think I have a couple. That was one of the nice things. You can install a couple of.
And actually, one of the other nice things is I briefly mentioned that Terminal is now the default, Terminal environment in Windows. So if you run PowerShell or Command Prompt or one of these WSL environments, you will do so inside of that terminal shell. It supports tabs. You could literally have multiple tabs in the same window, each with its own version of Linux, all running side by side if you wanted to do that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Let me just type your name here and see what I've got. Microsoft Standard WSL.
Oh, interesting.
Doesn't say what distro it is. I'm pretty sure it's Ubuntu.
It has to be, but I hate to say that definitively since I don't know. But
interesting.
Yeah,
but that's. I mean, it's awesome. Now, how in a GUI you would install from the store or you install from the command line? Do you know?
I have never done this, but I assume you would do it from the command line.
Yeah. So you'd do an sudo apt-get. Install.
I was originally I actually wrote chapters for Command Prompt.
We're gonna turn you into a Linux guru whether you like it or not.
Well, I was originally gonna add this to the Windows 10 field guide. So I wrote Command Prompt, I wrote PowerShell, and I wrote and at the time Terminal was not the default, so I had a little thing about that. But yeah, I'd written something about this, but now I've moved forward obviously, so it's gonna be part of Windows 11. So this is to come. I haven't spent much time with this recently, basically.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious about this.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll figure out a way to get ads in there, Anyway, we're going to be in a weird state here for many years because now there's going to be the version in Windows, which is an optional feature. And then there's this store version. And the store version is kind of the official version. I don't know how they're going to. Well, I explained, you know, PowerShell. So Windows PowerShell is the version that comes in Windows. And then PowerShell, I'll just go to this thing manually. It's just called PowerShell. So it's like Microsoft PowerShell. And I could be wrong, but I believe the way that these things are parallel to each other is that PowerShell, the one that's out in the world, is the one that will be constantly updated and is supported on every supported version of Windows, right? And then the version in Windows is, you know, Windows PowerShell, and it's probably stuck at whatever functional level it was at when you installed the operating system. I'm not 100% sure on that one, but that's my guess. And that I think that what they're going to do with WSL will kind of map to that. Except this time it will be the version out in the store rather than the one, you know, the one you get from the web or whatever. WSL is an app in the Microsoft Store.
It's really cool. It's really cool. Yeah. I'm very happy about that. But like I said, I wonder, you know, people, Linux people always say, well, do you think this is Microsoft's going to eventually replace Windows with Linux? It kind of feels that way. It's slowly working its way in. I like it.
I would say since announcing this, since it's been a thing in Windows, Microsoft has also come up with something called the Windows subsubsystem for Android, right?
Yeah.
And so
that's right.
That runs Android.
But that's Linux too, by the way. That's just another Linux distro.
Listen, Linux boy.
just call me Tux.
Okay.
It's interesting. Well, it's interesting.
Yeah.
You know what? This is like the accounts thing we were talking about earlier. Make it all available. Make it easy. They want you to live in Windows. Well, so what's the best way to get people to live in Windows? Give them anything they want in Windows.
Yeah. The real thing that this is the complexity of the Windows app ecosystem, which is will run anything you want. You know? I keep referencing this, but this is my whole life right now. But I was writing the Edge chapter on web apps. And if you think about how like a browser like Chrome works, if you get to a web app on the web, it will say, hey, do you want to install this as an app? And the point of that is it will work on any platform. Like you can do it on Android, you can do it on the Mac, you do it on Windows, whatever. And Edge works the same way. But if you go to a web page that's not a web app, like my website or most websites, you can still kind of make a shortcut to it. And it will work sort of like a web app. You have to be online, obviously. You can make the shortcut sits there in your taskbar. It looks sort of like an app, you know. But actually, Edge more recently has done something completely different from the way Chrome does this. And so Edge now actually lets you install. I'm going to say install because it's not really installing anything, but it lets you install any web page as if it were an app. They're trying to blur the lines between what is a real web app, you know, like a PWA or whatever, and what is just a web page. And honestly, from the perspective of a user, who cares what the difference is, right? I go to the Throt.com website every day. I don't want it in a browser tab. I want it on my taskbar with its cool little icon, and it opens in a window that looks like a regular application. Who cares what's going on in the background, you know? And I think Windows generally is kind of like that. You know, there are web apps, there are native desktop apps, there are store apps, there are Android apps now, you know, like who cares where it came from? I just want the apps.
And they all run. They all run.
And they all,
it's nice.
They all run. Yeah. I mean, there's some complexity to it, but. Yeah,
well, but that's under the hood. That's complexity for Microsoft. Right?
It is.
The user
I mean, so the example I would use is this happened with Chrome OS. So one of the goofy things about Chrome OS, they allowed Android apps in. And now you get into a situation where you're like, okay, well, so what's better, the web app or the Android app? So Microsoft Word, for example, has certain features on the web app that are not on the mobile app, but the mobile app version has certain features that aren't in the web app. They can both access the same backend OneDrive storage and you get access to the same documents. You can make a shortcut to both of them in your whatever the Chrome start menu is called. And they sit side by side. They have similar icons. You know, and if you make the argument, you're like, you don't have to know anything about what kind of app it is. You're like, okay, but now there are two Microsoft Word icons. So which one do I use? You know, so you kind of run into that possible complexity. I don't have a good example of that yet, but if, for example, the Microsoft Office apps for Android ever became available through the Android App Store for Android, the Amazon App Store for Android, it's possible we could have that situation in Windows, right? And then you could have three versions, the web, the Windows, and the Android version.
You know, that'll it's great. Fun. They all are kept up to date though, automatically by the store, right?
Sure.
That's nice. It says Linux will be kept up to date by the WSL will be kept up to date automatically.
That's right.
That's great. Will the Android apps also be
updated automatically? Not by the store. So by the Android store.
By the Android store. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit of
additional complexity. On the phone. No, I understand that. Yeah.
That's cool. Not by the Microsoft store.
Right.
It is cool. Yeah,
Who cares?
It's good.
Who cares what store? Some store.
There are people who care. But yes, Well, it's like drivers. You know, you ever do this little game? I was just doing this today, right? You bring up an HP computer in this case.
Yeah.
You get whatever drivers you get through Windows Update. You install the HP support app. You run that. Oh, you get 8 more drivers. Great. You go back to Windows Update. Oh, wait, there are 3 more drivers. Wait, you go back to HP support.
I hate
you
that.
You get into that
little
game.
I hate these OEM updaters, but everybody does it now. So what's your recommendation? It feels like I should just be able to do Windows Update and not do the I'm on a Dell here, the Dell update or the HP.
So it depends on so you have if there are computers where all of the updates come through Windows Update. That's an ideal situation.
Yeah. Right?
That's an ideal situation. I understand that Dell and HP and Lenovo need to have the support app because there are other reasons that you may have to interact with your customer that aren't just driver updates, right? There's other things going on.
Yeah, Dell, there's a service tag and all that. Yeah.
There's no reason not to do that. There's also, but the thing I think that most people don't really think about is there's a quality bar for Microsoft for getting it into Windows Update and also the kind of a necessity, right? Does this need to be in Windows Update right now or is this just something you'd like to do? Whereas like the OEM might be saying, look, we're putting this thing out. You know, we want them to have this version. And to Microsoft's testing, like, yeah, we're okay with this other version. And that's where you get into the conflict.
This is
because
the classic problem with Windows. Every driver, there's a WHQL version. There's a reference driver from the from NVIDIA. There's a manufacturer's OEM driver. And there's a Windows driver. It's like, and they all have different versions. And there's some work and some don't. And WHQL is always the older one, but sometimes that's a better one. Yeah, look, so Dell... Dell says I have 3 updates.
What's the Dell app called? I can't remember the name of that.
Dell Update.
Dell Update. There you go. Okay. Must be the name was confusing.
They're Dell all update. Recommended, but I don't, you know, unlike Windows,
That's recommended. Yeah. So in Windows Update, actually, there's a place for recommended updates that are not going to happen automatically. Most people don't really kind of even look at that stuff. But it's depending on the PC. You may see that stuff, optional updates, it's called, right? You can go into optional updates. And that's what that is. It's kind of optional. Like, it's not necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
You would hope that whatever that driver was, if it was necessary, especially if there was a security issue, that it would appear in Windows Update. And if Dell has their own thing, it should appear there too.
You know? So that's another question I have, which is people sometimes ask on the radio show. And I say, you know, always look at the optional updates because they are drivers. And I presume, they're optional, but I presume if there's a driver update, you should apply it. Yeah,
I always do. Anyone looks at optional updates
anymore. Nobody does.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Wait till they're critical. Okay.
I always run through whatever Windows Update offers, and then I go to the PC app. And as I just described, that bites me in the butt sometimes because then you get into that little game where you go back and forth. But
I'm going to do it. Let's see. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
It's giving me an update for a Dell dock, which I don't have. So unless this is called a dock, it's just a USB dongle.
Yeah. That's good.
If I suddenly go off the air, you'll know it's because I'm rebooting my Dell dongle.
Yeah. Every PC maker has stuff. There's a Dell peripheral manager that handles things like webcams. And,
Yeah. So you really can't ignore the OEM stuff, though. You really have to do it.
It depends on the PC. You know. By the way, one of the great advantages of a Microsoft Surface device is it all goes through Windows Update. You know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Surface app.
Sure.
I mean, that gets updated from the store
because the OEM is Microsoft.
Right. And that's one of the. That's a good example of them actually living by example in this case. Like saying, look, you can do this. You know. And how awful would it be if Microsoft created a Surface updater?
That'd be hysterical. The Microsoft updater.
Yeah, it's everything you need to know right there.
Is this the argument against installing a generic version of Windows on an OEM system that you should always use?
No, because you can always get this stuff. So if you blow away, I guess the argument is what's more important to you. So if this was my mother, I would not say in the old, you know, go to Fresh Start, blow away all this stuff and get a clean install. And then she comes up and she's like, I can't get online.
Right.
It didn't even have a Wi-Fi, which is, by the way, super rare these days. It's not going to really happen.
No, no, but it'll plug and play all that stuff. And
But you could still run through all of the drivers you can get for Windows Update, go into Device Manager, another activity no human being would ever do, and see there are 1 to 3 devices that are not correctly configured with drivers. And you have to figure that out. And so the easiest way to figure that out for a normal person is just install whatever the OEM app
right.
is.
That's why Fresh Start now goes to the OEM
yeah.
version.
Yeah. Well,
that's why I should, right?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Did I put words in your mouth?
Well, I don't want it. So Fresh Start is gone, and it's reset this PC that can be customized by the PC maker. You can override that customization, which is what using Fresh Start could do. And if you do that, you may find, because you should, the problem is, like, I get why you would want to do that. Sometimes there's crap on there you don't want, but you might not get all the drivers. And then you're kind of on your own to Google them or Google the name of the Dell update program or whatever it is. Get that thing installed and then use that to just install the drivers. You can do that. I mean, it's just what's more important to you, you know, or how do you want to spend your time, or how worried are you that you won't be able to get this thing up and running? It just depends on who you are as a person. You know, you have the choice, but you just, you know, hopefully you know how to get back out of it if you do the wrong thing, I guess.
Does your mom? Okay, it did it. Three out of three successful. Didn't have to reboot, even though it said I might have to reboot. So now let's do Windows Update, just out of curiosity. Yep.
And they're going to be like, I don't know what you just did, but the system is screwed.
We got to undo that. That's terrible.
Check the file system.
It's so much. Windows is so much fun. It's just so much fun. I enjoy it so much.
I feel like if I ever found some medication that would fix what's wrong with me, I would never use this again. You know, but
I just had a security intelligence update, which they used to call definitions, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's what that is. And that's it.
Go. You're good.
So I'm good.
That's good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You're not supposed to, but I'm going to check under optional updates. No, nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
That's fine.
Nothing.
So that's what you should see. Like, if you think about it, those were recommended updates from Dell, meaning they're not necessary updates. Mm-hmm. If they were necessary, they should have been in Windows Update. So Windows Update checks and they say, look, you're already meeting our minimum bar for all these drivers.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the way it should work.
You're good. Yeah.
It doesn't always, but that's the way it should work.
I think, you know, this actually is a reason to choose an OEM, one OEM over another, maybe. Because this is handled properly.
I have a little less experience with Dell, but I would say between HP and Lenovo, they're pretty consistent experiences. They have, you know,
those are the three names. Apps. In fact, somebody just asked me on Sunday on the radio show.
Yeah.
And I said, Dell, HP, Lenovo.
That's right.
I think that, I mean,
honestly,
there are
Acer
a lot
does
of other
a good
ones.
Job.
Yeah, Acer's good. Acer's is good. There's lots of, you know, MCI there or MSI. There are lots of good ones. But
and there's lots of bad ones. Like, for example, Samsung, if your idea is Windows is not cluttered enough and there are not enough ads in Windows, get a Samsung device.
You want those more things, ads?
We can
do that.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. There's a case for Fresh Start or the PC. We reset this PC, I guess. Anyway, there's lots of different choices. Razer is out there, you know, whatever. But, you know, Microsoft too. I mean, honestly, we'll see what things look like. I feel like the reliability issues with Surface have quieted down. I don't have any recent gen Surface PCs or anything, but I would like to be able to recommend these computers. I think they're great looking devices. They don't get updated very often from kind of a look and feel perspective, but you know, that this is what you want. You want that Pixel, Google type Apple type experience. Like, the hardware and the software maker are the same. It's clean. As clean as it can be. There's no extra junk on it. You don't find a lot of extra software utilities on there. There is a Surface app. That's not a big deal. Just for the unique features of the Surface, like the pen or whatever it might be. Ideally, in an ideal world, I would be able to recommend that without qualification. But they have a history. So they're getting there, I think. I don't know.
They're getting there.
Yeah.
New Qualcomm Snapdragon that is going to change your life. It is the year of the ARM PC. Woo!
Well, and by the year, we mean 2024. So
some year, any year would be good.
I don't remember what year they announced Windows 10 on ARM. It might have been as early as 2015, but it was somewhere in the next year or two, probably. And we've talked about this before. It's never really lived up to the promise. I think just getting Windows running on ARM is an incredible feat, and it can only get better, but that's kind of a low bar, right? We know that Qualcomm bought a company called Nuvia that was making performance-oriented ARM chipsets for PCs and also for data centers, but we care about the PC space here. We know that the idea behind that purchase was to, you know, adapt their existing Snapdragon chipsets to make them better for running on PCs. The fear, of course, is that as they do that, the advantages of Snapdragon or of ARM in general start to disappear a little bit, meaning that the 24 hours of battery life goes down to 12 or 10 or 8, and as the performance goes up, and that inevitably what we end up with is what we already had, which was like an Intel PC. But we'll see. You know, I don't mean to be cynical about it. We'll see.
Is this the first Nuvia chip? Nuvia/Qualcomm chip?
We're kind of assuming that's what this is. Yeah. And the reason, but yes, we assume that that's what it is. So earlier this year, I mentioned on an earlier show, Cristiano Amon, the CEO of Qualcomm, said 2024 will be the year for Windows on ARM. Therefore, killing all sales of Windows devices in the meantime.
Oh, God.
But whatever. Okay. and we know that they have adapted, I don't know, 5-6 generations of Snapdragon chips to work on Windows PCs. And that the latest version is the best, as you would expect. But also, because of platform improvements that Microsoft has made, that this thing is starting to come together, right? So it emulates 64-bit apps and 32-bit apps. There's the, I don't know that anyone is doing this, but app developers, you already have an app in the store. You already have an app in the world. It doesn't have to be in the store. Microsoft Office, for example. You're like, look, I'm not recompiling this for ARM, but I would rewrite parts of it for ARM, the parts that need to be, especially, and other parts can be emulated. They created technology to do that, where you can mix and match source code bases and all that kind of stuff. So they've done what they can do, but there's only so much we can do with the chipsets we have. So we've been waiting on this Nuvia thing. And it's always been like next year, next year, next year. This year, we found out it was the year after next year. Qualcomm just had their big Snapdragon event last week. And they announced, you know, new chipsets for phones. They announced new chipsets, I think, for like, headphones or IoT devices or whatever, all kinds of different things. They didn't announce new chipsets for Windows, except actually, they did talk about it a little bit. They talked about something called Orion, which I read as irony. But it's Orion.
It's Orion with a Y, right? It does look like
Orion.
Irony.
Like, why Orion? Yeah.
No, that's bad.
Yeah. So we don't know if that's going to be the marketing name, or, you know, sometimes chipsets just have, you know, family names. Like, maybe that's just the family name. It, you know, they might still call it Snapdragon. I think Snapdragon has a pretty good brand recognition, whatever. It's oddly, it's not just for Windows, right? They're going to use the CPU. They call it, I don't know, CPU is a tough phrase, but they're going to use this chipset.
SoC. SoC.
SoC. There you go. Yeah. In smartphones, digital cockpits, driver assistance systems.
What's a digital
infrastructure?
You mean like an airplane cockpit? Digital?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Wow.
So what that tells me, that's a weird way to describe it.
Digital
but
cockpits.
Snapdragon today works across a wide range. Yeah. You know, they customize it for these different use cases, right? So obviously, if you buy like a pair of headphones, there could be a little Snapdragon chipset in there. If you buy a smartwatch, there's a version for that. If you buy an in-car system, or you buy a car that has an in-car system, there's probably a version for that. That we know there are versions for tablets and smartphones. We know there's versions for Windows. So maybe they're changing the brand. I'm not really sure.
That's a disadvantage, though. When you make a chip, see, this is where Apple has such an advantage. They're making chips for specific hardware. They're not making digital cockpits yet. Maybe they will. To make something super general is problematic.
They do make them for specific markets. Like, they actually do that. They have different, in other words, if you buy a smartphone today, it's not the same chipset that's in your headphones. It's not the same chipset that's in the Windows PC. They might have some common, you know, core background or whatever. They're going to have different layouts of efficiency and power cores. They're going to have different wattage, you know, power requirements, et cetera. I mean, they are different.
Yeah.
But the way they're describing this is
probably not.
I don't know. It's so vague what they're doing. But really what they've done is basically put this thing in a holding pattern. So sometime next year, they will really reveal more information about this, including a timeline. My suspicion is that this thing gets formally launched a year from now, like I've said in the past. It will be called whatever it's called. It will be Nuvia-based. We're assuming, by the way, ARM and Qualcomm get their stuff together because those two are cross-suing each other over this Nuvia acquisition and licensing costs, and we'll see how that goes. That might play some role in the time frame. I doubt it, but you know that might be part of it. And we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we keep hoping for this future. I don't know if it was IDG or Canalys or one of those companies said, you know, by whatever year, 2024, 2025, ARM will be 30% of the PC market. To which my cynical self said, yeah, man, Apple's going to be going to town then because 29% of it's going to be Macs. I don't, you know.
Well, we'll see.
I don't know. We'll see. I know. We'll see.
We did a story.
I like the idea of it.
Yesterday on MacBreak Weekly about one of the things Apple did, which is really interesting, you know, of course they have to, they have an emulation layer called Rosetta 2, so they can run Intel software on the new Macs with the ARM.
Oh, this is, I know
what
this
is. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So there is
So
Intel on the x86, when you do an add or a sub, they set two flags that don't exist on ARM because ARM is reduced instruction set. It's not. So the parity flag and the adjust flag are set, and those don't exist on ARM. So normally in an emulator, what you'll do is an add or a sub will take five or six instructions because you have to do this extra stuff to emulate this. Most apps never use the parity bit, for instance, but some do. So and Apple, in order to make Rosetta faster, built that into the hardware. So it's a single instruction on Apple Silicon, whereas on every other ARM chip set, it's five.
Wouldn't it be
six.
Amazing if that's why they're fast?
According to this, and this is a developer guy posted this on Mastodon.
It's that simple.
Yeah,
it's that simple.
But because this the ads and subs are done all the time.
All right. So, but you understand how far back this goes, right? So
the
interesting thing about the story to me is this means they can emulate like the very first Intel
8086
chipset.
Right.
I mean, that because that's how far back that operation goes.
Exactly.
That's
it. Also explains something we see sometimes, which is that software runs better on Rosetta 2 on a Mac than it does on an Intel Mac. Like it's faster on Apple Silicon. And we just assume, well, this is a much faster chip, but maybe it's because of this optimization.
So there's a lesson to be learned here for Qualcomm or whoever else is going to be putting ARM on Windows, right? Or Windows on ARM, I guess. I hope they're paying attention to this because it should have been clear to everyone as soon as the M1 came out that they did something right and it feels like magic and
it's little things.
I don't use a Mac, but I will tell you, I have Macs, but I mean, I'm not like a Mac guy, obviously, but wouldn't that be a revelation, right? All these years. No, but anyway, so, but when you run Windows on ARM on Mac, right now, that runs better on an M1, M2, whatever, than on any physical hardware you can buy.
Exactly.
That, I mean, whatever Qualcomm is doing with this Nuvia stuff, the bar has to be not a Core i5 level of performance. It has to be, you got to beat emulated on M1. If it's not faster than that, just don't even bother releasing this.
It's really.
You know, that's an incredible accomplishment on Apple's part.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. It's a very tiny thing that makes a huge difference.
And I don't think people who have never used this believe it. It just doesn't sound possible. Like when you say, that's why some people say that like some Intel app runs better on M1. People, like, you know, like it sounds like they're just making this up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, like this is, I know that's why it's crazy.
Yeah. It's really wild.
That's what people are experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah. But also is why it's going to be a challenge. I mean, for Qualcomm to duplicate this performance is not going to be, it's non-trivial.
And by the way, the industry is not standing still for the next 2 years, Qualcomm. So good luck because, you know, Intel is revving their chips. They're going to figure it out eventually. I mean, they're slow moving, but they're going to get there. Apple isn't exactly sitting still. They're revving their stuff every year. I mean, the bar, you know, they're struggling to get up to whatever level, but the bar keeps going up and up. And I, I'm nervous about them ever being able to pull this off, but I'd love to see it happen for sure.
Oh yeah. I don't, have you run Windows on ARM on a Mac? You probably haven't.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Parallels does it now. VMware does it as well.
That's right.
It's pretty fast.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's no, it's not pretty fast. It's really fast.
Faster than it is on an ARM PC.
This is the problem. So I just sort of, I flew through this and it's not worth going into great detail, but through some combination of hardware improvements on Qualcomm side, and more important, I think the platform improvements that Microsoft has done, emulating 64-bit code is huge, right? They have made Windows more viable on Macs because no one buys a Mac to run Windows like Windows. They don't care about the Windows. They care about an app. You know, I need it because I want to use a Mac. I've always wanted to use a Mac, but I have this one Windows app I have to use for work and I can't switch. Well, guess what? That one Windows app now runs faster than ever on a Mac. And it's a huge problem because most of the apps that run on Windows just run fine on Windows and ARM or run slowly. But now most apps now run fine on Macs that shouldn't or otherwise aren't compatible with these new Apple Silicon systems. So they have Microsoft rather has inadvertently really helped Apple here. Apple did all the work they did to make the M1 incredible. And now Windows on ARM is better. Well, that means that Windows can be better on a Mac and it's better than it is on a Qualcomm PC.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's crazy.
That's not
It's good. A weird problem. Yeah.
It's kind of because one of the things that Macs did in the early days was they had boot camp that would let you dual boot a Mac into Windows.
Yeah, but dual booting is one thing. Virtual PC or what was the thing? Well, Parallels or whatever
Parallels
you would use
or
back
VMware.
In the day.
Yeah.
You'd use something. It was slow, but at least you got the thing going. It was fine. But when Apple went to Intel, that made that stuff way more viable. And now you can have the coherence mode where you're just running the app and you hide Windows.
They lost boot camp. People were very upset. But it sounds to me like they shouldn't be because this is better.
No one wants boot camp. Yeah. You want to run the Mac and you want the app or the two apps, whatever it is that you want. You're not running, like I said, the idea isn't to see the Windows taskbar and all the junk. It's to run the app. And they magically
appeared in place. But Microsoft shouldn't care about this, right?
But they do care very much about it because, as you might have noticed, they're not exactly friendly toward this environment.
Yeah.
I guess it's technically supported.
But you're buying Windows. Well, no, you're not.
You are buying
Windows.
They won't
let you buy Windows because they won't put out Windows on ARM.
Right.
Is this that exclusive? Do you think it's still an exclusive deal with Qualcomm? Is that?
Yeah, I think that might be one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can run, obviously, you can get the Insider Preview Program version. Yeah. And a Windows key will work, and a Windows keys work, so you can activate it if that's what you want. I bet a lot of people aren't. I think that's kind of the problem. Like, people run this thing, they never see the screens about activation. They're just running an app. Like, who cares?
Right.
It's like, you're not gonna, you can't customize your desktop unless you pay for it. Like,
I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
That's interesting too. Yeah. So Microsoft, they're missing the boat. They're missing an opportunity because
I think so.
If I'm running a licensed copy that I paid for Windows on a Mac, that's good.
But you know what? So I should just.
It's just another OEM.
They are, yes, but this is like, why doesn't Apple put iMessage on Android? Or, you know, the problem is when Windows runs better on a Mac, which people used to always say, and it was never actually true, but now actually with the ARM version, Windows does run better on the Mac than it does on actual hardware. That gets into a weird place because Microsoft really wants this thing to fly. But if the best situation is on Mac, then people are going to walk away from Windows. They're just going to the Mac's already better. Like, just use the Mac.
Yeah, what do I need it for? Yeah.
Right. That's the problem. I think that might be the holdup.
All right. This is a good place to take a little break and then come back with more of Windows Weekly, the Paul Thurrott edition.
Okay.
Paul is running Mary Jo Foley in emulation, you might notice.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're right. It's running a little slower than in real life, but, what are you going to do?
Our show today brought to you by Code Comments. If you like this kind of geeky stuff, you will love this new podcast from Red Hat. As you know, the comments in the code often are the most entertaining part of reading a listing, is the comments. That's where the person writing the code explains to others, or actually often to himself 6 or herself 6 months or a year later, because it's like a whole different person. What was I doing here? And sometimes they're profane. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes you just say, I don't know why this works, but leave it in. Code comments are often the best part of coding. Well, that's the idea with Code Comments, the podcast. Lets you listen in on two experienced technologists as they describe building, you know, systems, software. There's a lot of work that, you know, starts from the sketches and the original idea, whiteboard, you know, drawings to development to product that ships. Nobody does it alone anymore. Burr Sutter is great. He's a Red Hatter, and he is the host of this, lifelong developer advocate, knows how to talk to developers, brings in developers to sit down and talk about what they've learned from their experiences. And it is not only just a great conversation, it's a great way to learn. If you go to redhat.com/codecommentspodcast, that's the name of the podcast, Code Comments, and go to redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. They've already put out a few episodes and many more to come, I hope, because it's a really wonderful show. Deep learning was the one I really enjoyed that. Burr is a community organizer. He's really part of the open source community, so he's really good at talking to developers, and he draws them out, and it's so much fun. If you want to listen, there are a couple of things you could do. You can just look in your podcast player for Code Comments, or go to redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. Or if you go to our show notes, twit.tv/ww, we're going to put it there too. Code Comments. If you like talking about how software gets made and you want to learn about the process, I know a lot of you read Paul's great articles on Therat.com about this stuff. This would be a great podcast to listen to. redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. Podcast, or search for Code Comments in your podcast player. We thank them so much for their support. We love to promote other podcasts that do kind of what we do that geeky stuff. This is a great one. Of course, it's from Red Hat. No surprise. redhat.com/codecommentspodcast.
Have you ever considered doing a software coding
podcast? We did one. We did something called Coding 101. Robert did it. Father Robert. And, it was great. I loved it. You know, sometimes, though, it's hard to make a podcast a commercial success. And I think the problem with coding is it's like gaming.
It's just so specific.
It's so specific. There's a lot of slices. I think maybe for the club, once I'm retiring from the radio show at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe I have a little more space.
What's going on there, by the way? So this was what you teased last week.
Yeah. So, retire is a bad word, but it is,
well,
in a way.
Not doing it anymore.
Yeah, I'm quitting. But it is retiring in a sense, because I've been a radio guy. That's, you know, that was my career for 46 years. 19 years as the tech guy on the radio, you know, where you have a transmitter and a tower and you have call letters. We're still going to do the tech guy. I'm going to do it with Micah. We're just going to do it as a podcast. We don't need a transmitter towers. We can, you know, who needs that anymore? Yeah. I think the radio audience has changed. Right. Who listens? Do you listen to the radio ever?
Nope.
No.
Only by mistake. And then I'm always unhappy when I hear it.
And what we notice is a lot of people just listen to the podcast. So it's hard for me because radio is how I got into this whole thing. I love radio, but I'm still really doing it. So retirement. It's not exactly retiring from talking into a microphone. It's just retiring from talking to a microphone connected to a transmitter that goes up into the air and comes to you that way. So, and it'll be the first time in my life that this is where I'm really retiring. I don't have a day job, where I don't have somebody, a boss.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm my own boss. Right. You've done this your whole life.
Yeah, sort of. I mean,
Do you do a W-2? I mean, do you have a...
Yeah.
All right. So you work for a living. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can not show up.
Right.
I can come in my jammies. I'm not going to do that because now I have the audience as my boss. But, it's going to be a change. Anyway, December 18th is the last radio show. Then we go into Christmas and the New Year's, and we'll do January 7th will be the first. Ask the Tech Guy. I'm going to do that with Micah.
And how, this will be a weekly show?
Yeah, on Sundays. It'll be the same time as the Sunday radio show. And finally, okay. And that's the other big deal is I get to have brunch for a change. I might come down to Mexico City and have some of those delicious brunches you've been eating.
They look good. I have some ideas.
Oh, good.
You know,
yeah, that's the other thing. I could travel more because a radio show needs a lot of infrastructure, but I mean, I could be any. You could look. You were in Mexico City. You're in Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter.
The internet connection in Mexico is better than the one I have here, and if everything goes accordingly, we'll be there a lot next year.
So oh yeah,
we'll see.
Good for you. Good.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. That's the idea.
Good. I love that. Let's move on to PC sales. How are they going?
Yeah. They're going great, Leo. I'm glad you asked. So, how do I say this? There was a period of time where things started to go south and companies were saying, yeah, but, you know, they're still better than pre-pandemic levels. And that talk has stopped. So not because they're not still. Oh. Yeah. The expectation now is that it's sort of like this Nuvia thing. It's pushed out. It's pushed out. And so what companies are starting to admit is actually this quarter that we're in now, which is a holiday quarter, is going to be a bloodbath. And depending on the company, depending on their business model, some of them are saying, look, it's going to be horrible for a long, long time. So HP just announced their quarterly and annual earnings. Their quarter ended, their fiscal year ended on Halloween appropriately. And basically what they said, actually their CEO said in a separate interview, we don't expect it to make a comeback during our coming fiscal year, our current fiscal year. So they think it's going to be bad at least through this time next year. In the most recent quarter, they did okay kind of revenue-wise as a company. This is a company, remember, that makes PCs. That's their primary business. And they also make printers and other hardware. So I think their PC business, I'm trying to find the exact number here, is I'm going to say it's two-thirds of the company. The printing business is smaller, obviously. But they had like an 11% year-over-year fall in revenues in the quarter. Their annual revenues were actually just about even. They were down a little bit less than 1%, but that's going to change right in the coming year because it's been going downhill quarter over quarter. PC sales declined 21%. Portable PC sales, which is most of them, declined 26%. Revenues from consumer PCs fell 25%. Revenue from commercial PCs fell 6%. Not good. So they're going to lay off a bunch of people over the next two fiscal years, up to 12% of the workforce. That could be up to 6,000 people, which is horrible. But this will help them obviously save money and, you know, better position themselves for the future. But this is a good example. The world's second biggest maker of PCs. This is basically all they do. I know they do printers, but you know, Dell as a slightly diversified business, you know, they do data center and other products. Lenovo also, HP is pretty much PC. So this is an interesting peek into how the market is really going, I think. And it's not going well. So this is the first time you've kind of heard that conversation. Like, we don't expect this to come back to anything better than pre-pandemic level. So this is going to be another level setting. We'll see.
Historically, our network and, you know, those kinds of computers still selling well? Is it just desktop computing and business computing, or
it's consumer and commercial,
everything.
Consumer sales fell dramatically worse than commercial, but even the PC revenues from commercial customers were down 6%.
So it's just this tech shrinkage is going on, but it's interesting that they're saying it's beyond what COVID brought.
Related to this, the CEO of AMD was interviewed on CNBC, and she said that PC sales are down more than we expected. There's a cycle of correction, which is what you basically just said, and that they're focused on kind of the long term. But the figure that came out of this is that PC sales overall, this is probably from a single company like IDC. I don't know what the source of this is, but it's probably IDC or Gartner, fell 20% in Q3, which was the worst it's fallen year over year in over 20 years. And these companies all expect it to be worse in this quarter, which again is a holiday quarter, which makes that kind of crazy. So we haven't bottomed out yet. I don't remember now, because I've read quotes from everybody in every company, and I'm forgetting who said this, but depending on the company, some are expecting things to improve by the middle of next year. But I think that advice is going to, I think we're going to see that shift. We'll see what happens, but I'm hoping we can normalize this sometime in 2023. Obviously, if Qualcomm just released the Orion, we'd be saved. But in the meantime, we're doing what we can do. So there's that.
Max sales are up, though, right? I'm trying to remember. Thing is, when you're low, when you've got 2% of the market,
boy. Yep. So I have to look that up because there was a caveat I talked about with that. So let me just look that one up.
Jason October. Snell, six colors
here. Yeah, he's the guy. Actually, I think this is where I got it from him. Yeah. So at the end of October, Apple, announced their earnings. The Mac was up 20. Okay, this is it. So Mac was up 25%, which sounds incredible.
But
it's not that incredible because in the previous two quarters, they couldn't meet demand because of all the supply chain issues.
That's right. Yep.
So actually, they were roughly flat, actually, which, by the way, in the scope of the industry is fantastic.
Yeah, it's better than.
I think we're going to see. Yeah, we're going to see that adjust too. But anyway, I knew there was a kind of an asterisk on that.
To what do you attribute this? Are people not buying computers? They're buying mobile devices instead? Or.
Yeah, I think what happened was there was an overbuying of PCs during the pandemic because everyone's like, oh, my God, we're stuck at home. We got to get work done. I can't go to an office. I need this stuff. In many cases, businesses were buying them for people. They were probably saying, look, go to Best Buy, get whatever you can get. Everything's sold out. Just buy whatever you can get. Usually there's some amount of PCs that are kind of in the channel. They're either on the wait, or they're sitting in warehouses, or they're on store shelves, not being sold, whatever it is. And that kind of dried up during the pandemic because everyone needed this stuff so badly. People couldn't, in many cases were afraid to even, or couldn't go into an office, take a computer and bring it home. Their employees said, look, just buy a PC. So this happened. This will always bother me because it really reveals a lack of sophistication. But I use this example because, again, I follow Microsoft. But during the pandemic era buying spree, Microsoft CFO Amy Hood came out and said, oh, my God, we didn't realize how great, PCs were. They're back. And this is fantastic. We're going to focus more on this stuff. And it's like, guys, you must have known this was temporary. So we're kind of seeing the dark side of the overbuying that occurred earlier. We already have a market here where people don't need to upgrade for many years. Now they all just upgrade. The whole world is upgraded. So those PC sales probably would have been spread out normally instead of over like a year and a half or 2 years. That might have occurred over 8 years. People are all bought up. They're done. We don't need PCs now. And it's just going to have, we're seeing the effect. I mean, there's the PCs that might have naturally been sold over time were bought and no one needs them anymore. So the question is always when it shifts, when this normalizes, I think of it as a plateau. It's kind of a reverse plateau, but when does the fall stop?
So it'll come back, you think? It'll start to trickle back.
PCs were never going to go away. They're not going away now. They are important devices. We need them for work.
It might be laptops, not desktops.
Leo, I've got 20 PCs in my office. I'm never going to have to buy another.
I know, but they're all laptops, right? Doesn't matter. Yeah, yeah. That counts. Yeah.
Yep, that's fine.
And anyway, no one's buying tablets. I mean, I have to say, they're not taking over as much as Apple would like that to be the case. Nope. Yeah. So it's either a mobile a phone or a PC. That's the other problem is these PCs last much longer. There's nothing driving you to get a new PC anymore.
Which is great. A problem which doesn't sound like it could be a problem, but you make these things are now more reliable. The hardware lasts longer. That's why it's part of the reason why Microsoft artificially changed the hardware requirements for Windows 11. You got to force people to upgrade, which is a goofy thing to do. I have a perfectly working computer here. Why would I,
Right.
We'll see. I'm curious about next year. I really want this to rebound, not just for the PC industry, but for the world. I mean, this is a nightmare. So hopefully, you would think, seriously,
screw the world. It's bad for us.
Well, it's bad for us. But I mean, with all the awfulness of COVID, if you could have said, listen, in 2 years, everything's going to be great. We're going to come out of this. You could get COVID, but you're not going to die from it anymore. It's just like a flu or a cold. It's no big deal. Everything's going to be great. You're like, that sounds great. Oh, there is one thing, though. There's going to be a huge recession. And all that buying excitement and euphoria has a dark side. You don't even understand. It's going to be a nightmare. It's like, so which one of these is worse? You know, obviously people dying is worse. But, I mean, it's terrible to come out of something awful and have to face something awful. You know, it's too bad. We couldn't have bought a couple of years. Could we have a couple of years of no drama? Is that something? Is that too much to ask? But yeah, it's too much to ask. So here we are. Anyway, we'll see. Obviously, keep my eye on that. And then just real quick, because who cares? But Microsoft has made Windows 10 version 22H2 broadly available. It means what this means is that it's being offered to the biggest set of PCs that could possibly get it. This is going to largely be two groups of PCs, I think. It's going to be PCs and businesses who are going to hold off as much as they can. And then also PCs that don't meet the bar for Windows 11, right? The weird drama around this one is that Microsoft has never once said what's in it. So I think we can safely assume now that it's broadly deployed, there is nothing in it, you know, meaning nothing new. There are, of course, some minor things. But if you look back over the history of the previous few Windows 10 releases, what you'll see is nothing dramatic. And they didn't even think enough of this one to even tell you about it. So it's kind of weird. I believe this is the first time ever, but it's out there. So if you have a computer that if you're an individual and you're listening to this, you're running Windows 10, you cannot upgrade to Windows 11 for whatever reason, you almost certainly have this by now. And if you don't, check, because you'll probably get it very, very soon. So.
And that's a good thing. Enjoy. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. You know,
we got a chatter. User 7522 says, I was just offered 22H2 today. You're on Windows 10, 7522. Just offered it today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's probably because of the status change. I think they just opened the floodgates there. So
it's unblocked.
I wish they'd talk about it. Yeah, it's unblocked. Oh, I'm experiencing my beautiful Intel PC problem. I won't bore you with
Shall that. I anyway. Read you the list of upcoming stories? We're going to Microsoft 365 land.
Yes.
Yes.
This is kind of cool. You know, my son is deaf. And one of the things we did with him was he got a cochlear implant when he was about a year and a half old. And then a second one when he was probably about 10.
Cool.
And he did well enough with that, with those, that he never needed to learn sign language, you know? And, you know, it wasn't like a purposeful thing on our part, but we just wanted to.
There are deaf advocates, you know, the Gallaudet College folks who would say you deprived him of his native tongue, in effect.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. My son was born with hearing and was deprived of hearing. So whatever.
There you go. Yeah.
We just wanted to have him to have a normal experience, right? So what they call this is mainstreaming. You take a kid with some kind of a handicap and you matriculate him into the public school system or whatever. And in his case, he had a completely normal experience. Like he didn't have to go to special classes or do anything. Like he hears great and speaks clearly and everything went great. And then he went to college and he ended up going to RIT, which has an incredible deaf program, and surrounded himself with deaf kids. And now my son is fluent in sign language. And like,
that's
he
great.
Just learned it from being there. Like
that's
it was like
so cool.
Yeah, just immersion, right? And it's cool, except when him and his buddies are around and they don't want us to know what they're talking about.
You should have learned it.
Yeah. So I've been, we never learned it because we thought, you know, we don't have to.
Don't need to.
Anyway. Yeah. So that's been kind of amusing. But it's been interesting for me being in the tech industry, watching as accessible technologies have occurred, right? One of the early things that I felt very strongly about was captions and in video of all kinds, right? And I used to, you know, there are laws that control how that's supposed to happen. In the early days of digital video, a lot of those videos didn't have captioning or had the worst imaginable captioning. And I would complain to these companies and, you know, whatever. That is much better than it's ever been. But, you know, flash forward to 2022 and accessible technology is everywhere. It's really rather incredible. And so Microsoft has done a lot of stuff. You know, there's the auto live captioning in Windows 11. It's a great example. You get auto live captioning on Android as well from Google. It might, I don't know if that's Pixel only or if it's built into Android.
I think it's everywhere now. And Apple does it now too.
Apple does it too. So that stuff is fantastic. And that's really neat. So Microsoft just added a new feature to Microsoft Teams, which is a new sign language view for meetings. And what that does is allow people who are deaf or hard of hearing or whatever, or maybe you're interpreting for someone else. And you can have a sign language view. So it's a person doing the sign, like it's basically live captions for sign language. Right. And it's just, this is incredible to me. And my hope is that my son never needs this, but the fact that this is available, and obviously not just for him. I mean, I'm thinking of him because he's my kid, but the fact that this kind of thing is just a feature now of Teams to me is just astonishing. It's very exciting. So that's really neat. So, you know, again, as we move forward, the accessible capabilities that we see throughout the tech stack is, it's just awesome. So I love this kind of thing. I think that's really cool. And we used to call this thing One Outlook. What we now know is that it's a PWA version of Outlook for when, you know, for the Outlook web app, basically. But this thing is out in the world now. It's public. Microsoft is live with it. It's limited. When it first shipped, it was only, it would only work with a single account. Now it works with multiple accounts. These are what I would call Microsoft accounts. So you can have multiple, like Outlook.com, Hotmail, Live.com, whatever accounts. Eventually in the future, they're going to support Gmail and, you know, third-party accounts. So this, it's kind of, you know, it's interesting watching a like an email app adopt things that other email apps have had for 25 years. But you know, okay, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
It's interesting. It's a PWA. That's an interesting choice.
Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago. Well, maybe it was a long time ago. At some time in the past, I kind of made the argument that Microsoft should just take Outlook.com, turn it into a PWA, and make it the new Outlook. But when you look at Outlook.com, you realize like for that to work, it has to support multiple accounts in the way that a native email app does. Like you sign in with your account and you either have an integrated inbox view or separate views. It doesn't matter, but it has to just kind of work. You can finagle it a little bit, like anyone who forwards emails to Outlook.com and you can send emails as another email address. You can do that. It's a lot of work. It's not something I would ask a normal person to do, but I thought this years ago, all they have to do is what I just described. And honestly, that's what this app is. It took them, you know, 5 years, 10 years. I don't know. That's all it is. So it's getting there. It's interesting that Outlook.com and Outlook on the web are both not, they both are, neither of them support offline. Obviously this thing's going to have to, for this to be viable in any way, but it's happening. You know, that's all I can say. I mean, they're getting there. Give them some time. It's Microsoft. It's not like they know a lot about software.
We never did this before.
You say you want to use your email offline?
It's, but I don't understand this. What is it? Monarch, this whole Monarch thing, what they're doing with Outlook. The strategy doesn't seem clear to me because it seems like what they would want to do is unify everything. Instead, they're kind of not.
So what this is a little bit like Windows 11, right? They know not everyone's going to want it. It's simpler, prettier maybe, but you've got these old timers who use this esoteric feature that they only get in the desktop.
Right.
They need it. They want it, whatever. So they're like, okay, don't worry. You know, we'll support that for, you know,
legacy
some period of time.
Kills you every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
But I think, honestly, I don't use this thing. I mean, I would use it. I'm kind of interested in this, but I think making the break with the past is important. You kind of just have to do it.
Yes.
You support the old version for whatever the time frame is. And at some point you just say, look, it's time to move on. You know, Apple has always been very good at that. Maybe a little too good, actually.
Well, in mail, Microsoft, they're just as bad as Microsoft, I got to say. They just don't have as many products. You know, they don't have a big office suite with and so forth.
Well, but, I mean, Apple seems better about dropping legacy technology.
Oh, they're great at that. But something about mail makes it hard. But,
the only thing Apple Mail is missing, remember the lips they used to have for a Next Mail where it would like talk back to you?
Yeah, they don't have that.
They don't have that. So they dropped that. See, I don't know what you're talking about. It's completely different.
They have a web-based mail, iCloud mail, right. And they right. have, which is, so. I mean, all of this is kind of low feature, okay, yeah. And they have yeah. Apple Mail for iOS, and they have Apple Mail for a desktop, but they're all kind of, they're more like, you know, Outlook Express level.
Yeah. But by the way, that's what most people need. It's fine. Yeah. It's yeah. okay. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. There's actually a very rich ecosystem of mail clients on both iOS and macOS. I'm not sure why that is, but there really is.
Yeah, there is. Well, why are there so many Markdown editors and note taker apps?
It's kind of like that.
For some reason, it's just a fertile.
But there aren't that many. I think Outlook has really squashed third-party right. mail clients on the Windows side because there
I don't know why.
Really
to me,
many.
Like all you have to do is use Outlook to know why there yeah. could be something better.
Yeah, but, I used Pegasus Mail for a while. I liked that a lot.
Oh my God, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
Eudora back in the day.
Eudora, but all of those are kind of.
Yeah, they're all gone. Yeah. I really liked Outlook Express back in the day at one point. And then it was like internet mail and... No, that was what it was originally. It was internet mail, news, and calendar or something. Yeah. And then...
Oh, Pegasus is still around. It's free now. Came out in 1990.
I just use web clients and I consolidate to one account.
That's part of what's happened is pretty much every... Because of Gmail. Pretty much everybody just uses the web browser to get their mail.
It works fine.
Yeah.
And the Gmail mobile client is fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Fine. It's all fine. I want better. I want better than fine. I want great.
Well, the problem is Outlook isn't even fine. If I've consolidated on Gmail. Well, I'm going to try Microsoft Outlook because I use Windows. You configure Gmail in that thing. We could run this show, come back next week, and it's still not done syncing. It's horrible for that kind of stuff. It just betrays how old school it is when you try to do something with a modern email, service. It just doesn't work well for that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's okay. Don't, if you have Outlook concerns or complaints, Mary Jo's email address is MJF.
I know. You've done a great job in the Mary Jo emulation department. I think you're really getting it down. It's good.
I'm just saying she wants to listen to this feedback. So, you know.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
We talked about yesterday. I was surprised, and I thought, well, I'm going to have to ask Paul. SwiftKey, which right. Microsoft bought, it was really a great keyboard on Android.
Yep.
Microsoft bought it. It showed up on iOS. Microsoft yanked it from iOS.
Right.
And it just appeared the other day. What's going on? Do you know why?
They brought it back. They heard so many complaints. They're citing popular demand. Let me ask you a question. What man would trust this keyboard now? You're telling me.
Don't get attached.
They thought so little of it.
Don't get attached.
They canceled it. And a couple of loud people complained about it. Like, all right. Their quote is, we're investing heavily in this keyboard. Stay tuned.
Really?
It's like.
Really?
They're going to add new features. Yeah, I don't. I would not. I can't say that I would trust it. I will also say, and maybe this is a little out of date, but my experience, and I've not done a lot of this more recently, but has been that third-party keyboards on iOS in particular are a little balky. You know, they don't really work very well.
Yeah.
Sometimes it will flip back to the old one or whatever.
And you almost have to always go back. Like in passwords, they won't let you use a third party. It's very annoying. I gave up.
So if you can't.
Basically.
Yeah. If you're not going to get that kind of native experience, like why bother?
Yeah. I gave up.
It's probably better on Android, but on Android.
It is.
Actually, we're going to talk about
this. But the thing is, you have Gboard. You have a lot of great Android. Android, you got great choices. So,
I did try Gboard on iOS. The problem is, the reason I want to use it is because voice recognition on Apple is horrible.
Right.
Voice recognition on Google is amazing. It's amazing. So they have a Gboard for iOS. The problem is, when you use the microphone, it flips to a different app. You record into that app, and then it goes back to the app you're in, and it pastes it in. And that process is time consuming and it cuts you off. If you ever use voice transcription on Android, you could dictate a novel into this thing. But when you do it on iOS, you're like, hey, the other day and it goes back. You're like, and then you go, you have to keep doing it. It's horrible. Anyway, if you are a SwiftKey fan, it's back.
Good for you. Congratulations. Good for you.
Yeah, exactly. It is good for you. What else do we have? Da,
da, da, oh, da, you know what else we have, sir. Don't pretend. Don't pretend. Oh, yes. There's no Mary Jo Foley here to bang your gong. It's Xbox time.
in sharp contrast to the previous 3 weeks, I only have a couple of couple of stories. Yeah.
Oh,
so, no. Well, it's another week, so we have another example of Phil Schiller saying, seriously, we're going to support Call of Duty. What are you complaining about? So they literally went to Sony and said, look, we'll sign a contract with you. We'll do it for 10 years. Sony did not reply. Because Sony, of course, is engaged in legal processes
by the way,
around the world.
I'm gonna stop you right here because you're going to get emails, and you don't want emails.
Oh, my God. I wrote Phil Schiller. Did I say
it's Phil Schiller? Spencer, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, so sorry. Phil Schiller just canceled his Twitter account. I think he was in my head.
He did. He canceled his Twitter account. Apple did, too. They're deleting their old tweets.
I can't. Those two people could not be more opposite in my brain with regards to credibility.
Philip Spencer, not Phil
Spencer. I'm so sorry. I'm going to go do 10 push-ups. Okay. So Phil Spencer went to Sony and offered them a 10-year deal on Call of Duty, and they ignored him.
They ignored him?
But they didn't even reply.
They want to still rattle the cage. They don't want
They don't want to say yes to something. They want to get what they can get through regulatory processes and stuff. So that's fine. You know, Phil Spencer had said a week or two ago, you know, it's like he said, we can't write a contract for forever, but it is forever. If you keep making Sony PlayStations, we will keep making Call of Duty for that thing. So anyway,
that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
A judge is going to know. They're going to Schiller.
Yep.
Spence. Now I'm doing it.
Yeah, see how easy it is?
Spencer goes to court and they say, Mr. Spencer, you know, you can't buy Activision because you're going to kill. He said, I offered a 10-year contract. I don't know what you want. And it's on public record. So it's not going to carry any water we don't know what they want to do. They're saying it.
I mean, honestly, if I was Phil Spencer and this this process was approved and the acquisition went through, I go back to Sony and say, yeah, I think we're going to go year by year
for a little while.
You know, I think that's how I'd handle that one. I would have given you 10 years, but I guess now I don't have to worry about that.
I tried, but you know, okay.
Obviously they're going to keep making Call of Duty.
It makes money.
So if you think over the various console generations on Xbox, you think about the controller in particular, I would say there were probably four major controller designs over the years. There was the initial one, the giant one. It had a name like Big Boy or Big Betty or something. It was that really big one, which was honestly too big, even for me with big hands. There was the S controller, which was a smaller version. They initially made for the Japanese market because all those people complained about the initial giant controller. And then there was the version for the Xbox 360, which was based on the S controller. And for some reason, it's still perceived as being one of the better designs. And then there's the version that they did for Xbox One, which is carried forward to Xbox Series X and S, which with minor improvements. As far as I'm concerned, those are the best controllers that Microsoft's ever made. However, there is some vocal contingency out there that still wishes we had Xbox 360 controllers that would work on the current gen consoles and PCs for some reason. And now Microsoft has licensed their Xbox 360 controller to a third-party company called Hyperkin, and they're making a wired controller.
It even has the X and everything. It's cool.
Yeah. Here's what's fun. The name of this is the Hyperkin Xenon.
Hmm.
And do you know what Xenon is in Microsoft lore?
No.
It is the code name for the Xbox 360.
Oh.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Look at you going all Mary Jo Foley on us.
See?
Yeah.
I had a seance last night, so I could pull that one out of my butt.
Code name and all.
Nice. Oh, the Duke was the original controller.
Duke.
That's right. Duke. And actually, the Duke came back, too. In fact, it was Hyperkin that released a replica of the Duke.
So is this a pretty close? It looks pretty. Looks the same.
It looks the same. I think the one difference is below the circular Xbox button is a third button. That is the share button that is on the newest controller. Oh. So they added that.
Yeah, you need
which
that.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
Nice.
Actually, that's my new baseline. I wouldn't buy a controller unless it had the share button, but that's neat.
That's because you are Prestige 11, my friend, and you like to share your success.
I am. I think I'm Prestige 1 or 2. I don't remember.
You're just starting over.
2.
Just starting over.
Yeah, something like that. I'm having a hard time with my KD, though. I'm still kind of 1.0.
What's a KD?
kill death ratio. So ideally, you want more kills than deaths. I'm literally 1.00.
Wow. He dies as many times as he kills.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I am a complete waste of time, basically.
Mine would be negative. So you're better than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I'd be completely upside down in that kill death ratio.
Yeah, I was to begin with. I've been riding it back up a little bit. Yeah. So
I can't believe it. people, you know, they wonder why Americans are so violent. Well, now you know.
See, I disagree with that. I get it all out in the game.
Yeah.
I go out in the world.
You're a gentle giant. You're nice.
Yeah.
You're
I mean, I will unload in the back of a guy's head in the game, but like in real life.
No, never. Hardly ever.
A teddy bear.
Yeah. Teddy bear.
Yeah. Yep.
1.0 KD ratio.
Yep.
It's not bad, but it's not good.
Exactly.
It's right in the middle.
It's baseline. It's the minimum. Yeah. This is what we're looking for here.
I'd be a minus three.
Oh no, I have games that are horrifically bad. I have games where I'm like, oh, that went pretty well, and then it ends and it was like 8-23, and I'm like, oh, that's not how did that happen?
Yuck.
You know, like that never happened to me in earlier games, but this one, you know, it's harder.
It's a hard game.
This is a harder one. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's hairy. All right. Yep. We have the back of the book still to come. I'm just going to scan ahead. I don't see any alcoholic beverages, unfortunately, but we do have tips and the like. Mm-hmm. First, a word from our sponsor, the good folks at Rocket Money. Now, this is something everybody listening can, I think, identify with. Do you have on your bank account, on your charge cards, recurring subscriptions you've completely forgotten about? You know you do. You know you do. People really underestimate, actually, what's going on with the subscription thing. Rocket Money surveyed Americans to ask them. 80% of them said, yeah, we have subscriptions we've forgotten about. But they were asked to estimate, well, how much, you know, about how much a month is it? And they would estimate about, well, it's about $80 a month. When it turns out, when they checked, it's more like $200 a month in subscriptions. We are in a subscription economy. Rocket Money, formerly Truebill. So, in fact, that's how I got introduced to them. I've been using Truebill for years. Rocket bought them, turned it into Rocket Money, made it even better, by the way, I might add. But I love this, and you will love this. You need this. You connect your accounts. And then it has it's besides doing budgeting and giving you all, you know, your net worth and all the useful stuff you would get, which is very great. You know, it's just better than a checking account. This is, you know, or your savings statement or whatever, because this is everything. But it also has a tab, recurring payments. And you can see all the things that every month are coming out of your checking account. You will be blown away by this. I found not so long ago in the 2020 election cycle, I made a contribution to a candidate, and I didn't notice the little checkbox that says do this every month, and I forgot about it. Rocket Money found this and said, you know, you're giving this guy a lot of money every month. The election was 2 years ago. it was thousands of dollars by the you know, after 2 years, so I stopped it. Thank you, Rocket Money. You just saved me a ton of money. We all have something, you know, a newspaper you subscribe to you never read. A streaming service, maybe you got an unused Amazon account, whatever. Rocket Money finds it, and then this is the best part. You say, cancel that, and it cancels it for you. It cancels it for you. So there's, you know, one of the reasons we have all these subscriptions is, I'll get around to, I'll cancel. I know. I'll cancel that. No, this is easy. Lays it right out, says how much you're spending, cancel, cancel, cancel. It's that easy. Rocket Money. I mean, there are a lot of reasons you want to use this. It's a really great financial app to keep track of what you're spending, do budgeting, figure out what your net worth is, all of this stuff. But this recurring expense alone is worth its weight in gold, almost literally. I don't know how much it saved me, but I don't even want to know. It's a lot. Get rid of useless subscriptions right now with Rocket Money. Now, it's iOS and Android. I know you are smart. You could go right to Rocket Money in your app store. Please don't. Go to rocketmoney.com/windows, and that'll link you over to the App Store. And the only reason you do this is to let them know that you saw it here. Please, I beg of you. It makes a big difference for us. And it can save you, it probably will, hundreds a year. Save me more than that. RocketMoney.com/windows. Cancel those unwanted, unneeded, forgotten about subscriptions right now, even like you're paying twice for some things. RocketMoney.com/windows. How many music services do you subscribe to that you don't listen to? Rocket Money. That was a big one for me, too. RocketMoney.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly and Paul Thurrott. Appreciate it. Paul mentioned, and I want to circle back, you mentioned something you're going to do in hands-on Windows, and I bet you some people listening went, what's that? So I just want to mention that because it is not one of our traditional podcasts. Paul does it in the club, Club Twit, and every once in a while, maybe every third or fourth one, we'll put it out publicly. So, because somebody just emailed me, say, I only see it every few weeks. No, Paul does one every week. We put out the like something super useful. We put it out on YouTube. But if you want them all, you got to join Club Twit. And it is well worth it. $7 a month. You get hands-on Macintosh with Micah Sargent, hands-on Windows with Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett, the Giz Fizz, Stacey's Book Club. It's going to be Project Hail Mary in January. Also in January, Lisa and I are doing an Inside Twit that will be for club members only. You get ad-free versions of everything, including the stuff that's club-only. You get access to the Discord, which is the place to hang. I mean, I love the Discord. You also are subsidizing our Mastodon, our forums, our IRC. The club really is, from our point of view, kind of critical to our financial success going forward. It's getting harder and harder to sell podcast advertising, I'll be honest. And I see a day not too far off when it's really the club that's supporting everything. So if you want to help out, and I, you know, look, we had somebody say, I want to do it. I'm on a fixed income. And we said, no, please. I understand $7 a month for some people is a real hardship. I don't, that's fine. We still do all this stuff for free. So you can get it. In fact, if you just wanted hands on Windows, you can get that for just $2.99 a month. Any show you can buy for $2.99 a month. But if you've got the money, a couple of lattes a month, please go to twit.tv/clubtwit. It makes a huge difference for all of us. This next month, Lisa and I are not going to take salaries. We're not going to take draw because times are tight. And you know, we it's more important that you get paid and the lights stay on and the staff gets paid. And so that's fine with me. But really, you know, we need some help. I hate to say it, but we do. Club Twit, twit.tv/clubtwit, $7 a month. And I thank you in advance. We really appreciate it. It makes a huge, huge difference. Because I want to keep doing this. I think it's a really important thing to do. that's actually one of the reasons I stopped doing the radio show, is it was upside down. We were sending them money instead of me getting paid. And that wasn't a really good arrangement.
Yeah. You're not a charity.
Yeah. Well, what happened was initially I got a nice salary for it, but they couldn't sell ads anymore. Yeah. And we were selling ads on the podcast, and we gave them a cut on that. So ended up checks were going out but not coming in. Oh, it's time for Paul's back of the book and the tip of the week, number one.
Yeah. So Microsoft is having a Black Friday sale, shocker. There's some good stuff in there, but the best deal, I think, is on the Xbox Series S, which is now available for $250, which is $50 off. You can get, you know, controllers for some off, there's games up to 67% off, et cetera, but $250 for a next-gen console, fantastic. This is the console I use. I've been playing the latest Call of Duty on it. Looks fantastic. The only potential issue here is games are really big, and this thing only comes with 512 gigabytes. I almost said megabytes of storage.
Now, that would be scant.
That would be something. So, you know, there's storage you can buy for it. Like, you know, they have storage cartridges. You can do that kind of thing in the future if you're worried about that. But I typically have three games on there. These are huge games. So I think like Flight Sim, the latest Call of Duty, and Halo Infinite are the three games I have right now. But your mileage.
I saw your picture. Is it in Mexico that you have the S? I saw a picture.
No, it's here.
It's here. That's what you use. Is it? Yeah, that's what I use. Is it? It's not as fast though as the X, right? Or no?
I think it's as fast. I mean, the differences are actually fairly minor. The way that Microsoft described it, I think this is a little bit of overreach, is that the S is optimized for 1080p at 60, and the X is optimized for 4K at 60.
But actually, okay, I wanted 4K. That's why I got the X.
Well, the S can do 4K, and actually, lots of games play in 4K just fine. Oh. It will also do 1440p, et cetera. But that's the way they sort of vaguely describe it. The thing is, this is probably an oversimplification, but when Microsoft created these two consoles with slightly different processor GPUs, very slightly different, and probably different RAM, storage, obviously. But, they made a requirement for developers that they had to target both, right? They had to take advantage of the unique capabilities of each console. And again, oversimplification, but I think when you do that, what you find is that games will run great on the S because they have to.
Right.
If anything, it's possible they're not taking full advantage of the X, which is, again, a bit of a stretch. But I found almost no difference moving
between
them.
That's interesting. Bad. So as low
as... No, I mean, the X is more futures, proof and all that kind of stuff. But
$250 though. Wow.
$250. You kidding
me? That's great.
It's an incredible price.
Yeah.
You might want to look at whatever else they have. They have not just games, but, the Surface products, various Surface products are on sale. Some are last gen. You have to really know your stuff. Like the big sale on Surface is Surface Laptop 4. That's not the latest version, right? That's the version that's about a year and a half old. But whatever. Definitely check that out. But if you're in the market for a next gen console and haven't bought in yet, I have nothing but good things to say about the S. I've never really, other than not being able to just have a bunch of games sitting on it that I'm not going to play anyway, I've never experienced any issues.
Can you use an external drive or can you add internal storage?
You can add internal storage, okay. It has to be licensed by Microsoft, kind of thing. But
I did that on Michael's PS5. It's pretty simple. Right. You have to get an M.2 and it needs a heat sink. So I got it, and then it said, no, you have to have a heat sink. So I ordered a heat sink, and you paste it on. And then it's pretty easy. You just screw it in. It has to be a certain speed and all that. It added 2 terabytes. I mean, it was a nice.
Okay, so it's a little easier on the Xbox, but only because they limit it more. So you can't just buy any SSD and plug it in. You have to buy a licensed product. It looks like a cartridge, basically. Yeah, you plug it in.
Oh, but that's easier.
It's easier, but it's potentially more expensive, I guess. And I believe the only size right now is 1 terabyte, but that brings it up to 1.5.
Because I screwed up. I don't know if it's the same on the Xbox. On the PlayStation 5, I got him an external drive. It even looks like a little tiny PS5. It was cute. But you can't run games off it. It's not fast enough.
So it's just backup. Like previous gen Xboxes, you can actually add a USB 3 hard drive to this too, but you can only play previous gen titles. So you can't put like a new gen game on it, but if you have previous gen games, those will play fine off.
Yeah, because I have a USB drive hanging off of my Xbox.
Yeah, I did that for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. And I had it had an Xbox logo on it. It was probably like a Seagate drive. It was probably 1 terabyte, I would imagine.
I don't remember. I just did it. I just got a cheap old external drive. Yeah.
USB 3. Anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I just happened to get that. I saw the Xbox logo and said,
so it must work. Yeah.
Worth $10.
Yeah.
And just real quick, although we had some issues here, I guess, I did make 2 Black Friday purchases. I've written about this a little bit on the site. I'm going to write a little bit more, but I was on a Google Wi-Fi, which is a Wi-Fi 5 based mesh network here for the entire 5 years we lived here. And I just this past week upgraded to a 6E network using Eero Pro 6E.
Oh, you're going to love that. I think you're going to really like that.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. So I very rarely, a lot of tech industry events, you'll hear the phrase, and it just works, I've never really experienced that in my life. This is the rare example where, honestly, for the most part, it has just worked. I had a little difficulty with Sonos, but that's Sonos. They're always terrible.
Oh, God. I have nothing but trouble with Sonos, no matter what.
Yep. Yeah. No, but it's worked great, and the speeds are incredible. Like
it's not cheap, right? How much for the 3-unit?
Well, I see. I got it on sale, so it's normally $699.
Yeah,
I got it for under. What was the price? It was $400, but I also had some stuff I could apply to Amazon, so I ended up paying like under $300. So
that's great. Awesome. Oh, well worth that upgrade for sure. Yeah.
Yep. Long overdue.
And you have a big enough place that you want to have the base station and two beacons.
I needed four nodes with the old one. I got three worked here. I went to the furthest corner of this house to test the speeds. We actually get download speeds that exceed what the ISP tells us we're paying
for. Oh, wow.
Over Wi-Fi, which is incredible. I think the fastest I got was like 575. I'm paying for 400 over 40. And I can hit 40 going up, but I can't go past 40. But I've gotten in the 500s consistently. And I have a lot of, because of what I do, I have a lot of 6 and even 6E devices.
Well, I was going to ask you that. So you do have some 6E. Huh?
Oh, I have several. Yeah.
Laptops and such.
Laptops, supposedly.
Yeah.
I don't think this is true, but I was just looking. I looked this up. The other thing I got was a Pixel 7 Pro, finally. Same thing. Hugely on sale. Elevated trading value.
So no kidding. Yeah.
It was worth doing. But I looked the specs up, and supposedly this has, I don't think it does. It said it has a 6E.
It says it does.
Wi-Fi. Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
So
802.11ax.
Is that 6E?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's and I got to say, I had enough problems with the 6 Pro that I went to the iPhone, and I've only had this for a couple of days.
iPhone also honestly, 6E, yeah.
Yeah, but this has worked great. I mean, the Pixel's been
very
great.
Nice.
Like,
yeah, very nice.
It's been really good.
Yeah. Yeah, you get this new 6 megahertz band, or 6 gigahertz band.
Right.
And
that's right.
And I, you know, that's part of the reason you need this is because it's such congestion. Maybe not for
that's
you.
Right. It helps
you don't live in an apartment building, but.
Well, no, but I have so many, I have a lot of stuff. Like,
yeah.
For me, being able to kind of segregate the devices that way really helps.
Yep.
I have a Sonos, net thing going on for Sonos because Sonos, you know, terrible. But my God, everything else, like the Wi-Fi stuff has been, and even on, you know, like I'll work up in the bedroom and I'll publish like a new version of the book. And when I just downloading the PDF from that corner of the house used to be this like, do, you know, and now it's just like, it just goes and it's like, man, I haven't experienced that kind of thing in a long
Eero's,
time. So that's been.
Are you going to buy the $99 a year Eero Pro subscription?
No.
Not?
No.
You don't, because
I'll probably put Next DNS on it, but
yeah, exactly. You can do most of the stuff that you would do. The one thing, and I don't, you know, I got the Eero Pro when we don't use Eeros anymore. We use Ubiquiti, but I got the Eero Pro for something. It was, you know, of course, parental restrictions, but you can use Next DNS too for that.
Yep.
I feel like it was better QoS or something. The Eero does shaping, so it notices. In fact, you should get better speed over time as it notices use patterns and stuff. And I can't remember if you get that without Eero
Pro. I just wanted to funnel everything into this little Xbox and screw the rest of the network.
Yeah.
You know, when I play Call of Duty.
So Scooter X in the chat room is saying that you need to turn on WPA3.
Yep. For
Wi-Fi 6 and 6E, which is an issue if you don't have it. I think everything you have is new, so you probably support
WPA3. I'm not sure if that's true. So I do have 6E because you can see it's on 6E. Let me look at that.
Okay.
It's
working.
I felt like WPA3 was not on, but let me.
Okay.
We don't have to do this right now. I'm sorry. I'll look at it. But yeah. I thought.
The other thing I really liked about Eero, and they used to be a sponsor, they're not anymore, but I really liked about them was their support was fantastic. Whenever I had problems, like if you have Sonos issues, you call them. They will stay on the line as they say, okay, now try this. Okay, try this. And they were really good. I don't know if that was a few years ago, but.
I had to switch SIMs over. I'm on T-Mobile.
Yeah.
And they're having a thing now where you can't do self-service eSIM transfer.
Oh.
I think that it's just a temporary condition, but I think there was some kind of a scamming thing or something. Whatever it was,
right,
it doesn't matter.
Right.
So I had to call them. So they're walking me through it, and it took a little while. The woman was really nice. And then she goes, all right, I'm making the transfer. And it just cut off. And then my other phone came up, and I'm like, well, I guess it worked. And then she called me back. She says, hey, I'm sorry about that. We got cut off. I'm like, yeah.
It worked.
You got cut off because you transferred my SIM. What did you think I was calling you on? Like, what, you know.
Click.
I'm like, it worked. So
it worked. It's working. Yeah, it worked. I don't hear you anymore.
It was really funny. I was like, well, I guess that was the end of that. But then she called me back.
Oh, that's nice. That's good.
Yeah, I thought that was nice.
Second tip of the week.
Yeah. So I'm making this slow boil move over to Macedon, as you can tell if you've been.
Are you going to be, where are you going to live? Which host?
I'm on you. I'm on
you're
Twitch,
on me? You're on our Twitch.
Yeah.
Good. So you're at Thurrott?
I have done almost nothing, so don't even try to look me up. I'm not there yet. But I mean, I did sign up for it. So
okay. And did you get my you get my acceptance?
I did. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
But you haven't finished it. So
no, I know.
I still
I'm
don't
sorry.
See you. No. Don't apologize to me. Just apologize to your fans.
There you go. So in the meantime,
I'll approve you the minute I see you come across the transom.
I literally get you woke up. It must have been Thursday or Friday last week because it was after the show. But I woke up one morning and I was like, oh, God, what if Twitter what if it literally disappears? Like, what if they have so many technical problems and no one can solve them now? Like, what, you know, so I looked and like, what can you do, you know? And you can download your Twitter archives now, hopefully, right? So the way you do it is you go into Twitter settings and you request it. And they told me they zip it up or whatever, and then they'll email you back. I have never been emailed back. So it's possible that whatever part of Twitter does this may not be there anymore or something. I don't know. But if you do have a big Twitter archive, you might want to look into trying to do this. At least I'm trying to do it
myself.
It's
worth starting now. Apparently it's taking longer than 24 hours for a lot of people.
Oh, it's been way longer than 24 for me. Yeah. So it's something you can do, supposedly. I saw, I think it was Dennis Leary or some comedian actually made a book out of his tweets.
Steve Martin did.
Oh, that's funny. Okay.
We helped him. Because he is, was at the time, the funniest guy on Twitter, Steve Martin to go. And, but he was saying, but how do I want all my old tweets so I can write this book. And Gina Trapani at the time had an app. Mm-hmm. I hooked him up with Gina Trapani. She set it up. He was able to get all of his tweets in a form that he could then publish as a book. And so, yeah, that was a couple of few years ago. But yeah. And they're, by the way, well worth reading. They're very funny.
I use a homepage replacement thing called Momentum, which I love. And one of the links on there that I have is for Twitter Advanced Search. Because I use it so much, and I use it to find my stuff. Because something will happen, and I'll say, I had an interaction with someone about this, but how do you find that on Twitter? And the way you find it is through advanced search. And if I could have my archives offline, that would be even better.
There you go. Gina stopped doing that because Twitter killed their API access.
Right.
So but they had a really nice little tool. So now you're dependent on them, and God only knows what's happening. Steve's book was called The 10, Make That 9, Habits of Very Organized People. Make That 10, the Tweets of Steve Martin. Not a great title. Wow, it's 10 years old now.
I think it was Steve Martin who had the joke. It was like he was going to write a book, and it was like, how to make $1 million in real estate. And he's like, first, get $1 million.
Elon stole that joke.
I think that was him.
You want to know how to become a millionaire? Start as a billionaire and buy Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. That was my, how to turn billions in assets into $10 million in cold hard cash.
Yeah. I'm hoping that Twitter does not die.
Yeah, no, me too.
Unfortunately, because of all the moves, it's not a pleasant place to be right now. And I think you'll find Mastodon is not as exciting. But there's a lot of
interesting. Exciting?
Yeah, I don't.
What are you talking about? It's like CompuServe wasn't very exciting. Right. Yeah.
There's great conversations, though, there. And more people use. There are a number of tools that will allow you to go to Twitter and scrape everybody who has put a Mastodon account in their Twitter bio. Add your Mastodon handle to your Twitter bio and then use that tool. And you can import that into Mastodon, allows you to import followers. So as a CSV file.
It's a CSV file.
Isn't that hysterical?
CSV is the cockroach of file formats,
Well, Mastodon's open source, so of course that's what it uses. What else would it use?
It's incredible.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, we look forward to having you. The hardest thing with Mastodon is it's not Twitter, and people go, well, how do I sign up? Well, you have to find a server.
I know. I will say signing up is the hardest part. And I think all of the "this is how you go to Mastodon" articles are just that, like this. Yeah. And depending on your bent, you'll recommend a certain subset of whatever they are. And
it's somewhat important you choose a local server with a group of people you like, because that's your community. And then you could follow anybody anywhere else. And you can move. But I think you belong on Twit Social. Anybody listening to the show belongs on Twit Social, twit.social. Yep. I'm getting close to closing it down to new members just because it's starting to get expensive.
I like that it's more exclusive, by the way.
It is.
That's fun.
Once you're in, you're in, man.
Yeah. That's right.
Can't kick you out. Nice. No, and I do kick out anybody. I'm very aggressive in the moderation. Fortunately, it hasn't been too bad. Yeah. But we kick out anything that's not family friendly and is not inclusive of all people. You know, yeah, I don't want any hate, anything. Love it all, baby. Well, that's the other problem with Mastodon is for a long time, and I've been running a server for a few years now, there's a couple hundred people. And it was somewhere that people who were harassed on Twitter would flee to. Yeah. So there were a lot of trans people, a lot of gay people, a lot of people who were people of color who were, you know, harassed mercilessly on Twitter. So it's a more gentle environment. And so, you know, people need to be a little gentle because these poor people who owned this place until about 2 weeks ago are going, who let all these people in here?
Yep.
But it's been okay. It's been okay so far. It's been a lot of fun. I will look for you. Okay. I will look for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, get your Twitter. The other thing, the second piece of advice, Ed Bach mentioned this, is delete all the connected apps. That's more of a concern because if Twitter's security fails, those apps are, you know, a portal in. And you might want to really go through those over the years. We've all turned on a whole bunch of those. And I would just turn off everything you don't need. I also deauthorized all my desktops and stuff so that, you know, people would have, if I wanted to get in.
Good Lord, I have like 50 of them.
Oh, yeah. This oh, yeah. Like and there's no one button of disconnect.
Don't even exist.
Yeah.
Gleam.
Yeah.
Giphy.
Yeah, me too. I Gleam. Yeah.
Bixby.
Yeah. Bixby.
Deliver it. My top tweet.
It's an archaeology, an expedition.
Metro Twit.
Yeah.
Xbox Game Bar. Well, that one's covered. Discuss, I guess.
Yeah.
Instagram. Oh, no, that makes sense.
Some you'll want. Maybe.
Yeah, okay.
I killed everything. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah,
I killed it all.
I'm going to. Yeah,
it's a bit of a, stuff. You got a lot of, it's a click fest, you know. But
it's good stuff.
It's worth doing. Just another security thing.
I don't know what half of these are. It's like, what is this?
Oh, God, yeah. I had some from 20 years ago. Well, not 20, but, almost. 15.
This one's from 2016.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Let me try to find the oldest one. Metro Twit is from 2011.
You loved that. That was the best Twitter client for Windows.
Phone. Yeah, that was great.
Actually, you can use it on Windows still, yeah.
No, I'm getting rid of it. It doesn't matter.
Mr. T. We have come to the end of this fabulous program. Mm-hmm. I thank you so much for you do double the work now because you don't have Mary Jo Foley to lean on.
It's okay.
But I appreciate it. I appreciate it. If you want to know what Paul's up to, there's several ways to do it. He'll be on Mastodon. He'll be at Therot at twit.social soon. He'll also, he's still on. Are you going to still tweet? You'll tweet, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to see how it goes, right? That's the point. I mean,
this is just your exit in case.
It might just become a new thing, you know. Like,
it's fun. I like.
I use each social network for a very particular purpose, and I'm curious to see if Mastodon.
We would love a little bit of Paul Snark. It would really would be really nice.
It'll be more than a little, but yes, there'll be some of it for sure.
Turn on the advanced web interface, then it looks like TweetDeck. It looks like this.
Okay.
Just so you know, and
yeah.
It's fun. You're gonna like it. It's not Twitter. It's something else, but it's a good community, just like our forums. So twit.social is the Mastodon. Twit.community is the discourse forums. Of course, there's the irc.twit.tv, and there's the website twit.tv. This show's there at twit.tv/ww. You can download all the previous episodes. There's also a YouTube channel called Windows Weekly, appropriately enough. there's a live stream. One of the reasons I feel like I'm not leaving radio is because we stream everything live. This is just like live radio. At live.twit.tv, we do this show on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. You can watch us or listen live and chat live if you wish in our discourse, Discord, disc, anything, IRC, all of the discs. Paul's website, therot.com, is a great place to go. He does a morning podcast, First Ring Daily, every morning with Brad Sams. He also has the best premium content money can buy. Really good stuff. So become a member. His book, The Field Guide to Windows 11, is now out on leanpub.com. And if you buy The Field Guide to Windows 11, you'll get The Field Guide to Windows 10 as a bonus. So this is a time to do that. And of course, Paul joins us every week. When we get into December, I think Rich Campbell's going to stop by a few times from Run As Radio.
I got to talk to him, actually.
Get Rich in here.
See what the schedule is.
Yeah. We're not replacing Mary Jo, but it'd be nice to have some more voices. I'm sorry that Chris Capicella is not going to make it, but sometime in the next month, both Paul and I will wear matching Clippy sweaters. That will be something to watch for.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Thurrott. Have a wonderful week. Great. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too.
The turkey is a-brining.
It is. What are you doing? Are you?
We're going to Debbie's. We're going to Lisa's sister's.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
oh, that's great.
First time in years we haven't done it. I love Thanksgiving. We always do a bunch of ham and a turkey and stuff. But no, she's doing it, so that's fine. Got to spread around the joy, the cheer.
I used to do bagels and beer on Thanksgiving morning, but now I
like that.
I live here, so I know it was good.
was that when you were in the frat?
No, when I lived in Boston, it was a group of friends.
Oh, bagels and beer. And then you don't play Xbox and pass out. That sounds like fun.
Passing out is usually how it ends, regardless.
Always. All that L-tryptophan. Thanks, Paul. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We will see you right here next Wednesday on Windows Weekly.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. You already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.